Blog Talk Radio. Okay, folks, good morning, good evening, good afternoon, wherever you may be, whatever the time may be. My name is Vernon, a.k.a. Vernon, a.k.a. V-Cubed. I'll be your host from now until 1:30 a.m. Pacific Daylight Time. Call in number 619-639-4724, 619-639-4724. It's hump day for me. It's hump time. Not like hump as in sex, but hump in like this is the midway point of my shows. I do three shows a week. They're on the weekend, two on Saturday, one on Sunday night. So it's like hump day. What can I say? One more show tomorrow and we go into the week. Saw an interesting piece today and was reading through it, so I think I'll kind of start with that one. What's interesting about it is a level of thinking. It's a scientific level of thinking, but it's just interesting. It deals with some of the fundamental questions of time. What it says, quantum experiment shows how time emerges from entanglement. Time is an emergent phenomenon that is a side effect of quantum entanglement, say physicists. And they have the first experimental results to prove it. Whoa, what the hell does any of that even mean? What does that mean? Anyone even interested? It's fascinating. When the new idea of quantum mechanics spread through the sciences like wildfire in the first half of the 20th century, one of the first things physicists did was to apply them to gravity and general relativity. The results were not pretty. It immediately became clear that these two foundations of modern physics were entirely incompatible. General relativity and gravity, totally incompatible. Wow, that's a trip. You know, one of the reasons that general relativity came about was Einstein's work, and that's because some of the, a lot of equations of motion, classical equations, you know, Newton's third laws, they started to see some certain things come apart in certain instances. There are a lot of experiments there. The one that always comes up for me is the black body radiation. You heat something so hot that it absorbs everything coming in. The emission curves didn't follow the formula. So anyway, let's continue on. It immediately became clear that these two foundations of modern physics were entirely incompatible. When physicists attempted to meld the approaches, put them together, that is, the resulting equations were bedeviled with infinities, making it impossible to make sense of the results. Well, an infinity in mathematics, you know, most of these are all mathematical descriptions. You know, quantum mechanics comes out of the solution of differential equations. There's an alternative approach called the linear algebra matrix approach. And in mathematics, you run into problems where if you have something's divided by zero, if something goes to zero, things blow up. Everything falls apart. So, you know, when you try to merge the equations, they had problems. Then in the mid-1960s, there was a breakthrough. The physicists John Wheeler and Bryce DeWitt successfully combined the previously incompatible ideas in a key result that has since become known as the Wheeler-DeWitt equation. Important because it avoids the troublesome infinities, a huge advance. Well, the problem is when you start to get into any of this stuff, one advance usually leads to some other setback. And lo and behold, but it didn't take physicists too long to realize that while the Wheeler-DeWitt equation solved one significant problem, it introduced another. Now, this is the one that's fascinating. The new problem was that time played no role in this equation. In effect, it says that nothing ever happens in the universe, a prediction that is clearly at odds with observational evidence. That is fascinating to me. You come up with a solution that now says that time plays no role in anything. Well, certainly from my perspective as a human being, yours, I'm sure, your perspective as a human being, is that most people are clearly aware of time, and time plays some role in their lives. Well, you know, if you're a physicist, you can't put up with this kind of crap. You got to come up with something different. So, but it didn't take physicists long to realize that while the Wheeler-DeWitt equation solved one, this conundrum, which physicists call the problem of time, has proved to be a thorn in the flesh of modern physicists who have tried to ignore it, but with little success. Then in 1983, you know, the study of the evolution of science, you know, is fast. Anyway, it's fascinating to me. You know, how people sat down there, banged stuff out, got interested in math, did mathematical equations, kicked things around, and we went from classical physics to quantum mechanics, general relativity, all these things. You know, it'd be interesting to see where we wind up in the future. But anyway, here's what happens. In 1983, the theorists Don Page and William Woodruff came up with a novel solution based on the quantum phenomenon known as entanglement. Now, quantum entanglement. Now, for those of you just tuned in, this is all mind-boggling to me. I'm going through this piece that I just thought fascinating. Quantum experiment shows how time emerges from entanglement. What? Whatever that means, you know. In other words, as I just said in the very beginning part, is when quantum physics came online, people did the equations, and when they tried to take quantum physics and merge it with general relativity and gravity, everything fell apart. They had problems with the equations. They had all these infinities. You know, what an infinity in mathematics are points that blow up. You know, as you approach a certain point, it blows up. How do you deal with this? Well, two guys came along, Wheeler-DeWitt. They solved the problem, but the solution of one problem led to another problem, and that was, is although they got rid of all of these infinities, all these problematic places in the equations used to describe the physics or quantum physics, they found that time played no role in their equation. Time totally didn't matter. It was called the problem of time. And then in 1983, theorists Don Page and William Wooters came up with a novel based on the quantum phenomenon called entanglement, quantum entanglement. This is the exotic property in which two quantum particles share the same existence, even though they are physically separated. Now, you know, listen, when you get to the math and you get all this stuff, that's mind-boggling. But this whole stuff is mind-boggling anyway. But that is an interesting thing, is two particles that share the same existence, but they're physically separated. What the hell does that mean? See, what we're trying to discover here is where time comes into the whole mix. And as I said a couple minutes ago, time is a fascinating phenomenon. You should go over to, I can't remember whose show, 21OLG. Everyone's over there. They usually come back here later. You know, if it's boring, I don't require anyone stay. That's one of the beauties about being a free adult. Entanglement is a deep and powerful link and page, and Wooters showed how it can be used to measure time. So we now have a way to measure time, whatever the hell that is. Clearly, we're all affected by time. Clearly, we're all affected by time if in no other respect by aging. You know, time has long been the phenomenon that has been questioned. What does time mean? What is time? You know, I know we see the sun go up, come up, go down, come up, go down as the world turns, and we're in the path of sunlight then, you know, we're in the backside of the planet Earth, and it's dark. But, you know, I've often thought of what does that mean? What's it feel like to feel time? You know, you and I can know what it feels like to touch objects, feel objects, you know, burn your hand on a hot stove, but, and we know what it means to grow older. We are all little kids once. I'm assuming that you're probably not a little kid anymore if you're listening to this Blog Talk Radio show or some other show. Either that or your parents let you stay up very, very late. But time has been a curiosity for people throughout history. Time, what is it? You know, clearly it has an effect on all of us. You know, we're all born, we're all going to die. From the moment we emerge on to the stage, we're actually heading out. So anyway, entanglement is a deep and powerful link. And Page and Wooder showed how it can be used to measure time. Their idea was that the pair of entangled particles evolve is kind of a clock that can be used to measure the change. But the results depend on how the observation is made. So depending on how you're looking at things, time actually changes. One way to do this is to compare the change in the entangled particle with an external clock that is entirely independent of the universe. This is equivalent to God-like observer outside the universe measuring the evolution of particles using an external clock. What's it all mean? Where's it all going? I don't know. I think it's fascinating, though, that there are people that have this way of thinking. In this case, Page and Wooder showed that particles would appear entirely unchanging, that time would not exist in this scenario. So you step out there like God with a clock independent of the universe, and if you're to look at these quantum entangled particles, you know, you wouldn't, they would appear to be totally unchanging. But there's another way to do this that gives a different result. This is for an observer inside the universe to compare the evolution of the particles with the rest of the universe. In this case, the internal observer would see a change, and this difference in the evolution of the entangled particles compared with everything else I can't believe the way people are writing these days on the internet, is an important measurement of time. Obviously, wasn't proofread. So, in a way, time is relevant to us and evolves for us as we are inside the universe, comparing it to an external universe as it evolves. This is an elegant idea. It suggests that time is an emergent phenomenon that comes about because of the nature of entanglement. And it only exists for the observers inside the universe. Any godlike observer outside sees a static, unchanging universe, just as the Wheeler-DeWitt equations predict. Now, that's fascinating because anyone that knows anything about quantum mechanics versus classical physics is that ultimately what you find is there's something called the correspondence principle, and that is in the macro world, when you look at the equations of quantum mechanics, when you get in the macro world, they must eventually lead to the same equations that we see in classical physics in the macro view. Now, I know that maybe that means nothing to you, but I'm just thinking that's this whole aspect, if you will, of heaven, really, or eternity, living eternally. You know, Wittgenstein, a philosopher, said at one particular point, has a great quote that I like. I'll paraphrase it. And basically what he says is if we look at eternity not as infinite moments of time, you know, you slice eternity, moment, 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 in an infinite sense, and that's like forever, but is timelessness. That's a very different approach to eternity, as Wittgenstein went on to say, you know, then we all live in eternity. If we live in timelessness, we live in eternity. And this whole notion, this whole thing here, is talking about that from a scientific standpoint and how a physicist or scientist would look at it or parse it or tear it apart. So if you're a godlike observer outside and you see, you'll see a static, unchanging universe. But to us in the universe, everything is changing, being inside that frame of reference. I guess compare it to plus, or if you compare it to the relativity. I've always been interested and amazed by relativity, because what relativity says. People say, "Wow, you know, if you travel the speed of light, you could live forever." But what always seems to get dropped out of that is that as you experience time in the frame approaching the speed of light, to the external observer, it looks like forever. But the time dilation that the external observer sees is not seen by you, even though the external observer. To the external observer, an hour might be millions, quadrillions of years in your frame of reference moving at the speed of light. It will still only show up on a clock like an hour, so you will not particularly experience it. Now, I don't know what happens if you start to get into eternity and living forever and all that kind of stuff, but that's certainly one way of looking at it. So, of course, without experimental verification, Page and Wooter's ideas are little more than a philosophical curiosity. And since it is never possible to have an observer outside the universe, there seemed little chance of ever testing the idea. This was something that was fascinating about Einstein's theory of relativity. I think Einstein, I've heard it said or read it someplace, said that you can never prove that my theory holds, that it's true. It only takes one good experiment to prove it's wrong. So how do these guys prove it? Until now, today, Ekaterina Mareva at the Instituto Nacional de Rica, Ricerca Meteorologica in Turin, Italy, and a few pals have performed the first experimental test of the Page-Wooters idea, and they confirm that time is indeed an emergent phenomenon from internal observers, but absent from external ones. See, all it takes to live forever, to not be stuck in time, not die, not have a finite life, is get out of the frame of reference. Get out of the world. Get external to the whole universe. You know, I don't listen to Blog Talk Radio very much. I've told people that from time to time. I'll listen to something that listeners will tell me to listen to. I'll go listen to another show, or I do have people that forward shows on Blog Talk Radio to me to listen to show me what a piece of crap my show is by the mosh pit atmosphere and the thing. But I pick up a piece like this. I pick up like a piece like this. Quantum experiment shows how time emerges from entanglement, and my mind is boggled. It's not the kind of thing that most people out here on Blog Talk Radio are talking about. That's what they should. And listen, because it interests me, is totally meaningless. Just because I find it interesting, no one else needs to be interested in it, but I find it fascinating. I find it fascinating how people think, the evolution of thought. One of the things that originally got me interested in the sciences way back when was there was a point in time where human beings had to exercise their analytical minds. They didn't have the equipment to do what we can do today. They had to scratch their heads and figure things out. kind of unique if then. If I did this, then what? You know, if I'm right about this, if I'm right about the structure of this compound and I carry out this chemical reaction, which is supposed to do this, then the resulting stuff should look like this, or this is what I'd expect. You know, the early guys, there's a guy, and I've told some of these stories before, but they still fascinate me. A guy by the name of Kekulé, there's a solvent that's used in all sorts of reactions, a regular solvent out there. It's called benzene. It's a six-carbon ring in the shape of a hexagon. And for years, it boggled the mind of scientists, because it didn't fit their theory, because, you know, benzene, the way the carbon atoms are connected, they're alternating what are called single and double bonds. And what chemists knew of single and double bonds, they had different lengths. So you should have weird shaped rings. But every time the technology had expanded to the point that they could look at the bond lengths in benzene, and they all seemed to be the same. And the guy that resolved that problem was a guy by the name of Kekulé. And there's a variety of different stories I've heard. The first one I ever heard is that Kekulé was an alcoholic and in a DT stupor, envisioned snakes wrapping back around themselves on their tails. And it caused him to propose what's called a resonance structure, and that is the electrons between the carbon atoms are rushing around these rings like a racetrack, and that would account for the single bond length. Things you can't see. We've got the ability to see very small these days. You know, we get down to atomic levels, and I've seen atomic mappings of molecules. And then there was Emil Fischer that is responsible for or given credit for discovering what's called, you know, dextrorotary and levorotary molecules. That is, molecules that only differ in their handedness. They're physically and chemically identical, except you can't superimpose one on top of the other. It's kind of a unique characteristic of carbon with what's called a tetrahedral bonding arrangement. So it's like your hands. There's no way you can lay your right hand over your left hand and have everything match up. If you lay it so the palms would be on top of each other and the tops next to each other, the pinky finger and little finger are the opposite direction. The only one that lays on top of each other is that middle finger. If you put them face to face, they're like a mirror image. And he came up with this, so the story goes, one day while eating breakfast, he happened to notice that the sugar bowl on his table looked like the crystalline structures were different, looked like they were, in fact, mirror images of each other. So he grabs a magnifying glass and starts pulling out these crystal structures with tweezers. Sure enough, left and right. Now, what? Who gives a shit, right? Well, it turns out the biological activity of a lot of molecules, what make things a poison or not a poison, or make what allow things to work in your biochemical reactions, your body or not work in your body, has to do whether they have the right handedness. Certain pairs of molecules, certain atom arrangements will not go together, that are, will not come together in such a way the reaction can be carried out. Now, you know, that's why I said I've been doing Blog Talk Radio. I'm going on 3 years this year, and I don't expect if people are interested, they are, but I find it fascinating. I find it fascinating that people can exercise their brains to the point that they can see stuff in their mind's eye that so many of us can't. So here we have a condition where people are saying, well, one set of equations deal with a time problem when we deal in quantum physics. But time collapses, it disappears, doesn't have any effect. And then someone comes up and says, well, we can talk about something called quantum entanglement, where two particles are identical, but occupying different spaces, I think is what it said. But how do we test that? So we have a whole theory now that someone comes up. You know, you got to wonder about these guys. You know, I don't think that a lot of them take drugs. What the hell are they on? What's going on in their mind for them to be able to see the universe in the way they do? You know, one of the hardest, I've often heard that Einstein saw the world and the universe through the eyes of geometry and mathematical equations. You know, for most of us, you know, just getting through arithmetic in grade school is hard enough, let alone we get into that algebra in high school, you know, a little bit of geometry. It turns out people that are good at algebra a lot of times have trouble with geometry and vice versa. But there are literally people out there, based on the creativity of their thought and their ability and vision, beyond the way we can come up with stuff. And like I say, we have this particular case here where they're testing whether time is merely something that emerges from being inside the system as we are versus an external observer of the universe. So here, the experiment involves the creation of a toy universe consisting of a pair of entangled photons and an observer that can measure their state in one of two ways. In the first, the observer measures the evolution of the system by becoming entangled with it. This is crazy shit. In the second, a godlike observer measures the evolution against the external clock, which is entirely independent of the toy universe. So you did an experiment. I think that someone's thinking about this, but I'm going to go back to the top of the page in a little bit and look and see what they did. The experimental details are straightforward. The entangled photons each have a polarization which can be changed by passing it through a bifringent plate. God, you guys thought arithmetic was tough. You got some geeks in a lab. They may or may not be wearing white coats today. They used to wear lab coats in a lab. You know, as time went on, that became uncool. They threw away the pocket protectors and everything else. Okay? So now they're cool and hip, but nevertheless, in their heads, they're space cadets. Entangled photons each have a polarization which can be changed by passing it through a birefringent plate. In the first step, the observer measures the polarization of one photon, thereby becoming entangled with it. He or she then compares this with the polarization of the second photon. The difference is a measure of time. In the second setup, the photons again both pass through the birefringent plates, which change their polarizations. However, in this case, the observer only measures the global properties of each photon, properties of both photons, by comparing them against an independent clock. Although extremely simple, our model captures the two seemingly contradictory properties of the Page-Wooters mechanisms. That's an impressive experiment. Who thinks this shit up? What have they been smoking? What have they been smoking to discover what time's about, all about, and how does it help us? Perhaps most significant of all the implications of quantum mechanics and general relativity are not so incompatible after all when viewed through the lens of entanglement. The famous problems of time just melts away. The next step will be to extend the idea further, particularly to the macroscopic scale. It's one thing to show how time emerges for photons. It's quite another to show how time emerges for larger things such as humans and train timetables. As if this really matters for most people, but it's still fascinating that someone wants to explore the mechanisms of time. What constitutes time? Where does it come from? You know, maybe, you know, at the heart of it, if we really understood time, maybe we could stop it. The guys in the labs, that's what the guys that are willing to sit and scratch out equations, and that's what the guys that are willing to test them with experiments wind up doing for us. You know, it's kind of like all the technology we're looking at right now. I'm on Blog Talk Radio right now. There are people in the chat room, and I've got some callers here in the studio listening. But all that emerged out of someone's crazy head. Someone that was able to see something that you and I don't see. Imagine something at the level of their thought that you and I can't even begin to imagine right off. And through that imaginative process, if you will, we're able to translate it into something that could be worked with in a physical world that now, in terms of tonight and this show and where I am, shows up in terms of a computer monitor in my case. You know, I don't know how everyone else is listening. A computer, set of lines connecting a bunch of different computers throughout the world, and I'm able to talk in a microphone. You people are able to hear me, and those of you that call in and raise your hand, I'm able to talk to you. Fascinating. How often do people sit around and think about time or its meaning or how it comes? I don't know why from time my mind goes in those directions a lot. I remember recently thinking, I think I said this earlier in the show, is how does time passing manifest itself to me or to you? It's not something that can appreciate be appreciated by your senses. Certainly your senses and your sensitivity to light, if you have sight, if you're not a blind person, totally blind, your sense of sight allows you to see things get light and dark and light and dark and in some sort of a periodic fashion. So that you can associate this with some sort of rhythm and pattern, but how do you really, really perceive time and its passage? Yeah, we go through life, you know, but wherever you started out as a little kid and wherever you are now, were you aware of that? How were you aware of that passage? You know, there's that old adage, you know, all of a sudden I woke up one day and looked in the mirror and where'd that young person go? I've known a lot of old people, you know, and they still feel young. They feel as young as they, of course, their parts are not frequently working as well. Their balance isn't as good. They're all that stuff. But in their mental state of mind, feel all old, but yet this whole thing, this progression called time, seems to have taken place. And now we have people trying to reconcile what time is, how it emerges, how it manifests itself from the classical equations, the mathematical forms that describe a quantum mechanical or quantum physical universe in such a way that maybe some insight to time will be gained. If you could, would you slow down time? Would you stop time? Would you stop it? Now, if you could reverse it, would you reverse time, you know, such that you could go back, be where you are right now, but reverse it to the point that you were younger? An age-old question, something that's been around a long time and been of interest to a lot of people. We're all mesmerized by it. We all are confronted by our own mortality when it comes to time. I was talking to one of my family earlier this evening, and over the years, you know, I've known quite a few people that have died. I've been to quite a few funerals when I was younger. I lived in a mortuary, and when someone dies, someone that you knew personally, and they're no longer here, you get that sense of your mortality, and it hits home. It hits home. There's nothing you can do about it, nothing you can do to stop it. It's part of the condition, and really, in the big picture, really doesn't mean anything. That's the very human aspects, the human aspect of talking about time and being in time. These other guys are into it. You know, they're so dug into it from the science of it. You know, quantum entanglement, these particles, these equations don't work, this and that. Their time's going by. They're getting old like you and I. They might not notice it until they can't lift a chalk up to the board anymore and write out their equations. You know, it doesn't need to be just in the sciences either. It's like there seems to be a recognition among humans of the thought processes of great artists, albeit that's an interesting one. That's an interesting one to me from what follows is our technology has allowed the average, everyday, ordinary person to do phenomenal things that used to that had to be done in the past by technicians. You know, anyone today can put together a multimedia slideshow. You know, if you're working with a Windows operating system, it has stuff built in. You know, you drop your slides in the queue, they line up, you pick some transitions, you know, you find some music, slap it to it, you say, you know, put it together and voila. And there are programs out there that allow you to write music. You write music, programs allow you to play music. And so all of a sudden, everyone has some sort of an ability to generate artistic forms of a sort, but are they really the same as the true artist? I mean, there are people somehow with a gift for it. People that can take the same tools that you and I have available to us, and they have a visionary eye that allow them to do stuff with that technology that actually takes them beyond what they would have been able to do with maybe just their paints and their brushes or spatulas and palettes. But there's that other part of it that makes me wonder, truly makes me wonder, to when everyone can turn out reasonably looking stuff, reasonably good looking stuff, do we lose our ability to appreciate true art, whatever that is? I don't know anyone that's defined it. That's one of the beauties. That's one of the fun things in a way about the sciences and things is I think that they're more, a little bit more rigorously defined, certainly in one whole area. I don't know if it's all that different. You know, you get in the art realm, there's all the art basics, and then there's a person that steps on and beyond that and brings a creativity to it, whether it be in music, song, paint. You know, I don't know if anyone watches any of the shows, America's Got Talent. They've got different countries got talent shows all over the world. And you see the phenomenal things that people come up with to do to show their creativity. So, you know, I guess to the artist, when you expand the tools, the quality of the product they can put out there exceeds that the novice can just put out. But I've often wondered about that. When everybody can do it, have you, in fact, diminished? Have you actually diminished its meaning? If everyone's putting out reasonably good music, you know, so what? You know, it gets to the point when you look at human beings, we have a capacity to adapt to almost anything. One of the things I got rid of, you know, people getting rid of landlines. And still, some of the clearest calls that you can get are from someone that's got a landline. Hard to beat wires for carrying sound. But for the most part, we've learned to settle for second best for mobility and expense. You know, I wonder, we live, you know, I am just fascinated by the breadth of different thinking, the quality of different types of thinking. And maybe it's all the same. People told me, well, it's all the same. Everyone thinks the same, you know, different manifestations of thoughts, but it's all the same. We're all equally intelligent. What can I say? Wow, here's one that I had, that bill to ban certain tattoos, body piercings, passes the Senate. Now, who cares? The Arkansas Senate passed a bill to ban tattoos, piercings, and other similar body modifications, which it characterizes as non-traditional. He did this recently. There's some real tolerance or lack thereof. Senator Missy Irvin of Mountain View, Arkansas, sponsored a bill entitled An Act to Limit Body Art Procedures. She says that body modifications should be limited to traditional tattoos and piercings, whatever the hell that is. Fucking crazy people. I just did a piece on the creativity of the minds of people doing science, and here's an article. We got an elected official in Arkansas that wants to ban certain kinds of body piercings and tattoos.
You're really going to town there this evening.
Are you awake?
I'm awake.
What do you think about ban? Who cares about, you know, what people put on their body, you know? They want to tattoo themselves, do it.
People care about a lot of things that don't affect them. No, but what made me press the button is that you said something about us all being of the same intelligence, and I don't agree with that.
Well, there are people that ascribe to that point of view and just say, well, it just depends on how you define intelligence. It's like saying we all have the same artistic ability.
That's not true either. There are different types of intelligence. That's certain. And I mean, for instance, I don't really like technical stuff too much. If I were to take the time, I could probably assemble things and put the wires in the right place. I just don't like doing it. I don't know why. But every time I have to do it, I take the instructions and I sit there and I just go through it. There's different types of intelligence and people have different types of aptitudes. And the aptitudes, well, there's some obscure ones, but if you just base the basic ones on your five senses. You know, there's different types of intelligence, that's for sure. One type of intelligence that's not given enough credit is emotional intelligence.
What is emotional intelligence? How would you define that?
I think emotional intelligence would have to be the ability not really to get upset over things that you have no control over, or overly upset. Now, it's one thing to express an opinion once. I don't like that, but to be consumed and bothered over something you really have no control over. And there's a lot of people that are emotionally deficient. See, if you're able to take action and do something about whatever you're complaining about that upsets you, then you can take action and affect a change. But if you're unable to take action, you're just setting yourself up to be perpetually upset.
Let me ask you a question about that, though, Beasley. Do you think that that is a coping mechanism for a lot of people? Do you think that it might all, you know, surround what might be involved there? And I'm not saying it is or isn't. I don't know. If I look out in life, there are people that have the same ongoing melodramas as part of their life. And I've often wondered if that doesn't suit them well, because the melodrama creates problems that they're adept at solving, because they've been solving them their whole life. And heaven forbid, if you moved on and had another problem.
You might be adept at fixing your own broken bones, but that's no reason to continue to try to break bones. It's definitely a coping mechanism, and coping is a very undervalued trait, the ability to cope. Do you remember, this was a long time ago, but you've got a year or two on me, there was a play, a musical that was out, and it was called Don't Bother Me, I Can't Cope. Do you remember that? It was pretty popular. We're talking the 70s. Coping, at the end of the day, isn't that really kind of what it's all about as you make your journey through this life? We're all going to be faced with obstacles and tragedies and sometimes where it seems hopeless. Or, you know, there's things that you're not able to solve right away that you have to work towards. Or there's things that just go wrong and can crush you. I mean, anything can happen. You know, people have siblings die and too young or unexpectedly. You can be hurt in an accident. There's all types of things to make you frustrated and angry and lose it, like we see so many people do in our society. If you were to hear about somebody shooting six people and killing them, you'd be like, oh, wow, someone shot six people and killed them. I wonder what I'm having for lunch. It's an everyday thing. These people can't cope. So if people do this to cope, it's a good thing. I was taught this by my folks. Now that I look back, I was taught how to cope, how to deal with it. There's going to be some curveballs out there. Keep your cool, or try to keep your cool. I don't always keep my cool, but keep your cool. Think it through. Learn to cope.
Or at least don't let someone see that you didn't keep your cool, because they might take advantage of that.
What I didn't really, well, I kind of learned that from my folks, too, a bit. But that's never let them see you sweat. I learned that from my grandfather, because he's a gambler. And that's when you never let them see you sweat. You lose a couple of hands or you make a bad play, you just smile. Never let them see you sweat. It's not as interesting as what you're talking about.
I say that it's part of a dangerous world. There's a survival mechanism wired into that. You know, if you start to show weakness, someone might exploit it.
Well, and that goes back to emotional intelligence. See, some people, the vulnerable area was struck so hard and so effectively that they're just squealing like a pig. And for, you know, the sharks that are out there, they're just seeing blood in the water. They're going to continue to strike in that area like a boxer. You know, you see a boxing match and, you know, the boxer cuts the guy above the right eye. I mean, sure enough, he's going to key on that right eye and continue to hit on it. So you're on point there.
You know, it's like, I want to hear your feelings. You know, come on, it's okay. You can share your feelings with me. And the next thing you know, uh-oh, I shouldn't have said that, you know. I've often thought, you know, you hear it in the Miranda, you know, warning. But I think that can be carried further. Anything you do say can and be will used against you. It's just a matter of time, maybe.
Just today, I wish I didn't tell somebody something, because they spun it back around and it came to me. I'm like, oh, you totally misunderstood it. It's not worth correcting you, and you're off on this assumption, and it's really not your fault. I shouldn't have just never mentioned that. So,
came back and bit you in the ass.
Didn't bite too hard. It didn't bite too hard. It wasn't really too much of a bite. It was just like, I didn't have to let you into this door for you to do this thinking and come up with the wrong conclusion and then make this stupid comment. And I kind of want to correct you, but it's not that important.
You weren't hurt that bad, but nevertheless, it could have been avoided. That, you know.
Do you notice people in their 80s and their 90s, they don't talk too much. They don't really got a whole lot to say. They'll talk. I mean, I guess maybe there's some lonely folks that'll talk a little bit more, but they're not very talkative. You don't hear too many 80-year-olds calling in on these radio shows, you know, wanting to be heard.
Well, that part's true, but I can tell you from my when many, many years ago, I would say that I found that most old people fall into one of two categories. Either they're just curmudgeons and have closed down, or some of them come into life.
That's
pretty
true, too.
Pretty able to handle about everything. You know, it's kind of like many years ago I was thinking is, you know, the one thing I hadn't seen much of in my life were old people that were in the middle. They were either cranky, crotchety, didn't have any use for anyone other than, you know, of their age group, of that, you know, leave me alone, or the ones that seemed to kind of be laid back. That was, I'm not saying that's the way it is. I'm just saying that was kind of my life experience. And I was always impressed by older people that had that twinkle in their eye and seemed to have an appreciation for what life had to throw their way.
Oh, I've met and experienced plenty of them. My maternal grandparents, definitely. Always a joke and always a story. Always a lesson. Always a lesson. That's what parents are really good for. You know, you
or
hear about...
Or should be good for. One of the things that I think... I've often thought about that is the ultimate role of a parent is to teach children the necessary survival skills of life, and which when it comes down to it, the most important survival skill of life is what you're talking about, coping. Can you handle what's thrown your way? Not that you won't be depressed or gotten down. Do you remember a cartoonist by the name of Jules Pfeiffer?
Jules Pfeiffer. I do remember Jules Pfeiffer. I can't tell you what he did, though.
No, he doesn't matter.
He was a satirist cartoonist. He was actually a cartoonist. He did caricatures. I do remember him.
Yeah.
Was he the guy that did the thing for Playboy magazine?
Yes.
That was in the back of Playboy magazine?
I don't know if he did the one you're talking about, but he did a lot of stuff for Playboy, and he did a lot of newspaper.
That's the guy. Yeah, I'm familiar with him.
Anyway, he did this great, great, great cartoon that stuck with me. That stuck with me in my entire life, and it shows a little newborn baby crawling. It says, "You know, I engage you enthusiastically, life, you know, and you knock me down." It shows this little baby flat again. It says, I jump up gingerly, you know, and now the kid's about three. And I run at you and play, you knock me down again. And I jump up and grab myself and brush it off. And it's a whole progression of frames that, you know, as it starts to get into middle life, I get up a little slower. You knock me down again, life, you know. I sit here and rest a minute. And the final frame in the cartoon is one that always stuck with me, and it was a picture of a tombstone. It says, "You knock me down again, life. I lie here pretending to be hurt." I was like that. Is not even death is going to get me down. Anyway.
Right.
I'm
not letting you see me sweat or bleed.
Yeah. It's beyond that. It's not sweating or that's the way it is. I'll get up in a second. You threw your worst at me and you haven't stopped me, whatever the hell that means from the grave. And, you know, one of the things I think is fascinating, what's fascinating to me regarding the time we live right now is that I see a lot of young people that are stressed out about this, stressed out about that. They can't handle this, you know, cyberbullying's on the increase. You know, you hear about suicides, and I think, you know, some of the things that people kill themselves for is an indication that we're not teaching kids how to, as you would say, cope with life. I mean, for someone, you know, there again, we had the one, the high school student that went and shot, didn't he shoot his girlfriend to death at the prom? She turned him down. What's wrong? And then shoots himself. What about the whiner, Elliot?
Elliot Rogers.
Elliot Rogers, you know. Who gives a shit? You know, if you can't get laid, tough shit for you. I mean, go take a course on how to woo the ladies.
Tough for everybody else, too, because Elliot was a bad actor.
But do you think this is on the increase, or do you think that, in fact, what we are in fact seeing
is probably getting harder for most folks. And yeah, there's a generation of children that have been really indulged. And
it sounds
been,
like you and I might have a project we can collude on here, Beasley. Seminars for teenagers, young adults.
Can I do it like online from here at my desk or the luxury of my loft here? Because I'd give them love.
Maybe we can do that. Maybe part of the course is to do it from over the internet, so that you'll learn how to get advice about life that's powerful, empowering, and everything, without being in the presence of the instructor.
Right. Yeah, a little tough love in some direction, and you remember the scene in The Godfather when Johnny Fontaine, the Frank Sinatra composite, comes in to see the Godfather, and he's, you know, upset about what's going on in his life, and he really wants to get this part, and really what it is, it was the part of Maggio in From Here to Eternity. That's what it was, you know, but they didn't say that in The Godfather. At any rate, he's telling him and complaining and coming to the Godfather for advice. What did the Godfather do? Slaps him in the face. He says, you could start by acting like a man.
Exactly.
A lot of people need that. He said, you can start by acting like a man.
That's what drill sergeants are for, though. More of the young men should be going to the military.
You know what? Not a bad thing. There's a lot of them that need that discipline. There are a lot of them that need that discipline and direction. Absolutely.
I'm not your mother. I'm not your mother, young man, you know?
I don't give a shit.
I don't give a shit.
Make this bed and do this tight. Right, before I chop your head off and take the shit down your neck.
Before I put my boot up your ass.
What else did they tell you in boot camp? You can tell me now. You're not under any security clearance, are you?
Oh, I don't know. I got busted in boot camp for having a love-in one weekend. A bunch of us sitting around rolling cigarettes in wheat straw paper to look like joints, and we made a peace symbol out of flowers, and a major or something came by, saw us there, and marched us up to the company headquarters and put us on work detail on our Sunday off.
This is the guy that voted for Nixon. Should have been voting for McGovern. I don't understand you at all, this shift. But I know I kind of do understand.
Listen, I've always felt that you didn't have, you know, you could do a good job without having to say that you liked what you were doing.
That's true.
I was told in the Army many times I had an attitude problem. And I said, what's attitude have to do with it? I'm here doing a job.
Well, attitude is a little smirk on your face.
A little tiny smirk.
There's a lot of ways that people can show attitude. or a bad attitude or a lucky attitude.
661, you're on Blog Talk Radio with Vernon and Beasley here. We were talking about time, and then we moved on to attitudes.
Coping.
And coping. You would have done well in the military, Beasley. You should. I think that you should have taken a side trip and enlisted for a while. Your outlook of life
maybe,
would just be
maybe
something.
As an officer. Maybe as an officer with some people to abuse and demean. Maybe as an
officer.
That's
the only way they let you get through to the officer part is after you've been abused and demeaned in the officer candidate school for non-West Point.
Even after you finish college, you just don't come in as an officer? I thought you finished college and you come in as a lieutenant.
No. You might if you go through ROTC or something. I can't remember, but most of the guys that I talked one of my friends out of going to officer candidate school because he was in Vietnam and we were over there. I said, you don't want to be doing that. They're going to send you back. You go through OCS. They'll come back with a little golden butter bar, and you're going to be out there humping the booties with a couple squads. That's what they all do with first lieutenants.
Can I let you in on a secret? You and all my friends and enemies out there?
Absolutely. Your secrets are safe here.
Right. They're recorded and...
I won't tell anybody.
They're recorded and documented for history. All right. You be sure to keep this one to yourself.
My lips are sealed.
I've heard, and we're not going to be too specific, that there was an ancestor. I knew there was an ancestor on my father's side, and I heard the story from my people on my mother's side. And this was a long time ago, World War I, but this ancestor on my father's side, I guess it was a great-grandfather, or possibly a great-great-grandfather. I think a great-grandfather was a general. And the story's a little mystery from there, but I've verified it. There was a general... In my bloodline, I'm like, wow, a general. Now, I think generals are cool. I just don't like privates. I just don't think privates are cool. But I think generals are cool, and the more stars, the better. When I see those generals, like at a congressional hearing or something, with all of their decorations on, I think they're pretty badass. I think it's pretty cool when they walk in, everyone stops what they're doing and salutes them. Generals are really cool.
Oh, yeah. Well, I remember one in my advanced training. They had us for an inspection. We were all standing there, and he came up to me, and he says, how do you like the Army, soldier? I said, I don't, sir.
You're an asshole. You really said that? You didn't say that.
I really said that. He says, what do you mean? What do you mean? I says, when I wound up in the Army, I was in college. I was having a good time. I enjoyed it. I was learning things. And then this whole experience intervened in my life. And to be quite frank, sir, I'd rather be out there than in here. He moved on quickly to the next guy until he...
yeah.
Oh, I was a private.
Then he whispered in someone's ear. He said, keep an eye on that commie dude over there. Keep an eye on him. In fact, make him put him on latrine duty for 3 weeks and make him move a couple of mounds of dirt. Move it from
oh,
over,
you're just
to
gonna,
over there.
A little insight into my younger days is I was back in Maryland, Fort Holabird, Maryland, and I got over it. I can't change it, but I was kind of pissed. I loaned someone a stereo, and they didn't lock it up. So they got on me that I'd committed a security violation. I says, what the fuck? It's my stereo. If it gets stolen, it's my problem. So I had a particular Marine sergeant that was in my class that we did not get along. We bumped heads a lot. And... he came up to me and he says, you got a choice. You can either do what I tell you to do or you go and tell, you know, see the CO. And I says, well, it'd be a cold day in hell before I do what you tell me to do. And, but what he didn't tell me, is the commanding officer had said that he wanted to see me. He left that part out conveniently. So I went about my own little life, going about doing whatever I was doing, and I went up to check out the equipment to play pool one afternoon, and the executive officer for the company, I gave him my name. He looks at me. He says, are you the boar? I said, well, it depends on what you mean, sir. Are there is there more than one boar here? If so, maybe not. But if there's only one, I could be it. And anyway, he marched me off.
You're just a regular wise guy.
With
you know,
a big
and everybody
heart,
gives you this. Everyone gives you this credit. You know, like you're a vet like me. You know, if that kid knew that you were like a Weisenheimer, you know, your friend.
I was, yeah, but I got was damn good.
Friend,
I got
you,
the job done.
With a bad attitude. With an opinion.
You don't need a good attitude to get your job done. 803.
Hey, what's going on, Vern?
Not much.
Hey, Vern, you having a psycho corral tonight?
It is the psycho. It's always the psycho corral here.
Yeah, Vern. I love you, Vern. I love you. But hey, Beasley, why you ain't over there on All Talk Radio, All Talk Solutions? Why you ain't over there? Because you know what? You know, Vern, you know what? Some reason I called in their show, they found that I was white. And I can't call in this show no more. I mean, how fucking ignorant is that that I cannot call in your show because I'm white? Isn't that kind of crazy? I mean, I deal with black. I don't know no white people where I live at. One day I caught Vern. One day I told him on a show that I deal with hatred from black folks and white folks. Just because I'm in the hood, white folks don't want me to be in the hood. Because I'm in the hood, black folks look at me like, what the hell, you in the hood? And they had couple people named Jay or something talking about, no, it can't. You cannot have that. You cannot have that in the hood. But Vern, can you understand that? Like, just because I'm white but I live in a black community, is something wrong? It seems like Blog Talk Radio has against all people. I mean, because I heard white people shows that talk about against black people. I heard black shows talk against white people. I mean, like, what the fuck? Why should you even have a damn show because you're discriminating? Because, like, if I have a show, and I got almost 40,000 people that listen to my show, and I don't care who calls into my show. I don't care if you're white, black, Hispanic, reptilian, gray, or whatever the fuck you is. I don't really care, but this guy's show is a bias. This man is so damn biased, and he even treats the same callers on his show as being biased. Like, even if you call in and you're black, he won't even let you stay on that long. I mean, like, how do you do a show for 8 hours? Vern, can you do a show for 8 hours? I want to understand that. How do you do a show for 8 hours for 7 days straight for 8 hours a day? I'm like, and you're talking about solutions?
Would I do it? Let me phrase that question a different way. Would I do an 8-hour show 7 days a week? Hell no. I think it's crazy. Listen, I would not spend 8 hours a day. You know, you'd have to come up with some really huge paycheck for me to even consider that. There's no way that I would. Who would want to be on here 8 hours a day?
Cause you know what,
doing a show.
You know what? Because there's a lot of black folks on black BTR that I know. Like Professor Griff, I got Professor Griff's phone number. Public enemy. I know him personally. I talked to him. I talked to Mr. Talk. There's black shows on here that don't care if you're white, black, or who you are, unless you're talking about something that makes sense. Just like your show, Vern. You don't care who the hell calling your show. You can have a damn Nazi, reptilian, gray from another planet calling your show.
Michael Hood, I got to tell you something. There are people that would say that the fact that I don't care who calls this show is more a statement about my standards than anything else.
No, nah, that's a lie. That's a lie. Because, Vernon, you don't give a damn who calls into your damn show. As long as they could be a troll, but they only last for down 5 minutes and they're gone. But if you have good information to give out and you're on topic, or even if you're not on topic, just to give something, like you say, this is a psycho corral right now. We're in a psycho corral period.
And you know what happened last week? Last week's Psycho Corral, Michael, I tried to rein it in. I tried to hose that baby down. I tried to clean it up. I tried to make it all smooth and mellow. I tried to clear out the riffraff. I tried to make it highbrow. I tried to make it like, you know,
I was part of the problem. You know what happened
when I tried to clean it up, Michael? You know what happened when I tried to take control and have a nice, even keel show, mellow and all that? Everyone went to sleep.
I asked people I know,
and I said, how was that? They said, oh, I think I fell asleep. And they're the same people that tell me, you know, control that baby, control that puppy, rein it in. Now, I don't know what to do. If I let it run wild, people say, how can you do something like that? If I rein it in, they...
Vern, I give you an idea, Vern, on Saturday nights, Vern. Because I know you, Vern, I know you come on Santa Monica Cruise. You come on 9 o'clock Eastern time. I know you have the 9 o'clock show for Saturday, and you come on late tonight. But, you know, I guess Saturday nights be the crazy psycho crowd, and Sunday be, like, I guess, talk about real stuff, I guess. Because I know you had your 9 o'clock show, because, you know, I've been calling your show on, like, 9 o'clock Eastern time. So that's, what, 9, 8, 7, 6, that's 5 o'clock?
It's 4 to 6.
Okay.
Pacific time.
Yeah.
That would be 7.
You got Santa
7
Cruz. It's called Santa Cruz.
When it goes in overtime.
Yeah. I mean, I love that 9 o'clock show, too, on Eastern time. I mean, yeah, you got a little 9 o'clock show. I was like, that's cool. But I guess when it comes
Michael,
to
why don't they want you on the show? Listen, if people keep throwing you off the shows, though, is, you know, a good psychologist, psychiatrist, counselor would say, what's up with that? Are they throwing other people off? Does it have something to you? You ever hear the story of dog shit on the shoe? Huh? You ever hear that story, huh? Guy walks in the room. Stink, boy, goes to another room. Snakes stinks in here, goes to another room. Stinks in here. Why? How come it stinks every place I go, you know? Someone says, you ever look at your shoe? Big dog turd on the shoe. It's, you know, if everyone's throwing you off the show, you got to maybe look and see if you, they could all be wrong, clearly. But it doesn't hurt to look and see if there's maybe carrying some baggage out around that's getting under their skin. But I'm not here to judge you or anyone, you know.
But you could judge anybody. Judge them. Go ahead and talk shit to them. Because you know what, man? A lot of these shows, man, like All Talk Solutions, man, all they talk is about bullshit. They talk about having businesses, but none of them have any damn businesses. If you're going to talk about having a business, won't you bring somebody on your show that has a business? You know what I'm saying? Why would I listen to some guy that on the street can't even make fucking $10 on a damn street, but I'm going to listen to you for me to make a business? Don't care what the hell color you are. Don't give a fuck what race you are. Have a businessman that makes... Just say a man that makes over $200,000 a year. Just say $300,000 and you don't have a 9-to-5. Bring that man onto your show that can go ahead and tell people how to run a business. I don't want to hear no John Doe or no damn Joe the plumber that talking about telling me how to run a business. That's like me going to school for college, and I go to the business college, and I go to the school, and the teacher tell me, this is how you're going to run a business, but she never run a business in her damn life. It's like, it's a waste of time, you know?
Joe the plumber done pretty well since he got his face out there in the news. I don't know. You know, his face is everywhere. He ran for office. I don't know if he's making any money or not. You know, people are asking him to speak.
I guess he got his own little plumber business, but, you know, that was back in 2007, 2008.
Yeah, but I see. For you, Michael Hood, I got a solution for you. Just stop listening to that show.
You know what? I ain't listened to that show in 3 days, but I called in the other day and I heard you on there. I heard all y'all. But you make sense, Beasley. Sometimes you go ahead and get the calls, man. You do make sense, though. That's one thing I say. I mean, like, damn, I'd rather hear Beasley than hear anybody else talk. For some
they don't want to hear sense.
It get boring when I don't hear you on there. You know what, real talk, Beasley? It get boring when I don't hear you talk because you do make sense and you don't care. It's like you tell them what it is. You tell them
so
what
you're
it
in
is.
You're in your manic pro Beasley stage this week. So next week
Next week
you're promised to call in and tell you, you know, how despicable
I
am.
I called on Tyrone show the other night. Now I'm talking about how the government with ISIS, with the Iraqi shit that's going on right now in Iraq. He tell me, you know what, Michael, you had your 2 minutes, Michael. You're done. I was like, what? I said, I wish Vern was on. At least Vern give you your how you feel. That's one thing about Vern that I like about Vern. You know what? You want to do 7 days a week, Vern? I'll do your show 7 days a week, and you can get the weekend. At least Vern tell you how it is. I mean, he'll mute you if you get out of character with it, and you go crazy about it, and you talk other people over.
I'll take your show for a couple of days a week. You may have to move over to Spreaker after a month after you get kicked off. But Spreaker has better sound quality and it's cheaper.
And I heard Angela call in. Angela, bathtub girl called in to town on show. I said, what?
If you
bathtub
guys,
girl called in?
If you only knew what she's been through lately.
Oh my God, man, I done heard all this. She followed me on Twitter, man. I got 800 people that follow me on Twitter. I don't even know half of these people that follow me on Twitter. But at least I know Vern show. I'm gonna tell you real talk. Vern show is cool. Vern show let you talk your mouth, but if you get carried away, he will mute you. So I mean,
or if
Vern,
you start, if,
I know,
start,
and I've taken some guff.
If
from
you
that,
start you score, if you start, if you start scoring too many successive points and get a little aggressive with people, he'll mute you too.
But Vern, I called
Wait
you so
a
early,
second.
Vern.
How unkind! How harsh! That's yeah, right. Not me at all. That's not the person I know, Beasley. I'm not anywhere near like that.
Yeah, I'm describing myself when I'm talking about the aggressive person.
But the crazy thing is, Vern, I called your show earlier, Vern, and there was some trolls that was on your damn network. I think some trolls hacked into your damn your network, man, because I called their ass up, man. It was a bunch of trolls on your damn line. So I called the same number that I called now. And I hanged up, and they tell me, you know what, the guy is not here. They told me the guy is not, the host is not here. And I told them I was part of the NSA, and they hung up on me, and I called in three times. And after that, I hung up, then I called back your number again, and you came up. I said, what the hell is going on with Blog Talk Radio?
I don't know, but you know, Michael, what the most delightful thing about you is you start off on a nice, even keel, and by the time it gets going, you can get on a roll, baby.
Yeah, I ain't that fucked up tonight, Vern. I ain't that fucked up.
You can get on a roll. You can get going hot and heavy. Once you get wound up, you know, you get that speed momentum going. And the man that calls in, when I answer the line, it becomes a totally different man by the end of the call.
I mean, yeah, I get like, but
so
he goes through
a completely metamorphosis about once a week.
Vern, but
this
Vern,
week, I'm, this
to
week I'm his friend, and he likes to hear me talk. Next week, he'll be screaming and hollering that I'm on BTR too much, when I'm really not on that much at all.
But Beasley has my phone number, though. Beasley knows me. Beasley has my phone number.
I destroyed it. I don't call. I don't really call.
I know. I mean, shit. I don't know. I know you with me. Shit, ain't like that. I mean, but I mean, I listen. I mean, sometimes we get in an argument and all that. But I mean, but
I don't want to argue. There's nothing to argue about. We have. You're entitled to your opinion. I'm entitled to mine. There's no reason to ever argue.
It's like on All Talk Solutions. It's like everybody's fighting against each other because they're online or saying something that they disagree with. I mean, like. I don't argue with Vern plenty of damn times.
It's the digital divide.
Hey, you know what we can do? Listen, gang. Listen, I can leave this show going. I can fire up another computer. We can all go over to All Talk Solution over there for a while if you want.
Call in, Vern.
It's just prank call.
They're,
just prank call.
No, you know, the... They don't listen when I talk, and I talk about things that
they
I know about.
Yeah. They don't.
I try to give them some perspective, but
you know, I agree with you, Dizzy. You do give them a perspective. I listen now. I don't call in now. I don't even press one. I just listen. I listen for fucking eight. I listen for 7 hours, and I listen to you talk, and you give them some perspective. I was like, damn.
They have a hard time grasping it, but people will call in like it happens. I get disagreement and all kinds of silly stuff from the panels on these shows, but the people seem to have been chiming in lately. Like, Beasley's right. It's common sense stuff.
But if you look at Tyrone is biased. Vern is not biased. Vern don't give a shit what you say.
Oh, Vern has his biases.
You hear that?
Do you hear that, Beasley? He doesn't know
totally
what he's talking about. I know you better than
objective,
him.
Objective, open-minded, accepting, tolerant, kind, gentle.
You know, I thought that too at first, Mike. I've thought that too at first, so I decided to test the boundary some. Just because he doesn't go completely haywire and start screaming and hollering, he has his biases as well.
But nah. How can
tell
you say
me
Vern
one.
Is biased?
Tell me one.
Huh?
Yeah, tell us.
Oh,
I
you know, I would. I reflected
give
on a few
example.
Of them. I reflected on a number of them. No examples necessary. That's just my opinion.
But if you're saying
I can give them, but
Vernon cut your ass off. I mean, if you say something
that's
dumb,
do
but...
that's
no,
do
listen to the archive of this afternoon show, Michael Hood. Then you'll hear him subtly doing things to.
I heard you on Mr. Talk Show Thursday. I heard you on Mr. Talk Show, and you had N2K Knowledge, and N2K Knowledge said I'll kill everybody.
That was Friday.
That?
He said he hates all black people. I hate all black people. I knew that he was on one. I don't want to talk about what happened on other shows, though. We promised
know,
we wouldn't
but,
do that.
I mean,
where's
you know,
Jackie when we need
me,
her? Where's Jackie?
But Vern's show is really real, man. Vern's show lets you speak your mind. That's why
you
I should have
been here this
afternoon,
Michael. Where were you this afternoon when people were beating up on me? I could hardly even handle it. I was coming from both sides.
You got a little
Beasley
roughed up on the end.
On Beasley was just hammering. Beasley and Jackie were tag teaming me.
I missed that show, Vern.
We were speaking up for truth. Your bias has really showed today.
Not even close. I've got that file all tagged, you know, indexed.
The only thing I understand is why is people talking about running a business and when you don't have a fucking business yourself? So how do you tell another person
maybe they're drug dealers,
make
Michael.
A business.
Maybe they're drug dealers.
I have a business. I'm self-employed, and I've been self-employed the majority of my life. You know, usually doing one thing or another. And they don't listen. They don't get it. And they talk about doing things collectively and pooling money, but it doesn't really work that way most of the time. And you don't do that with strangers. And You gotta be careful, even be doing it with your best friend and somebody you trust, you know, the real smart way. And then they started arguing about whether to get an LLC or whether to be under the radar or to do it this way. And they just seemed to lose scope of the big picture.
And the big picture is everybody doing it their way.
Going into business and empowering themselves and in turn being able to empower others.
See, I might make a business that makes $100,000 a damn fucking month. I mean, Get somebody on there that's going to talk about business. Don't talk.
Hold on a second.
Don't have somebody that don't know how to
Hold
business.
On a second. I'm not. You're confusing me now because last week, or maybe it was the week before, you said you made $20,000 a week. Was that you or was that the gin?
I mean, I was playing with you.
That was the gin?
Maybe I make 100. You know what? Maybe I make $40,000 every 2 weeks. Maybe
that's
I have 20, some.
That's $20,000 a week.
Yeah. All my shit is paid for. My house is paid for.
Why,
my car
why,
is paid for.
Why?
I don't.
Why would you live in? Why would you live in the hood?
I don't live in the hood at all.
But you just said you lived in the. I'm not going
to
do this.
Maybe
with
I
you.
Go to the hood. Maybe I'm in the hood and go down the street to the hood. But I have some personal business that I have that doesn't deal with the hood. I mean, I used to go in the hood every day and have fucking butter.
I'm sorry.
Let me tell you, I used to have crack, man. I used to go down the hood and make with crack. I used to make almost $1,200 a week. I had that butter. I had that good shit I used to cook.
Oh, I don't want to hear about this. This is not positive.
But you go to Tyrone's show and you think you got something positive, though.
I don't
you go to
think
Tyrone
anything.
Show.
I'm passing the time. I'm just looking.
I like the interactions.
I do like some of the interactions. It's interesting.
But you go to Tyrone's show and you're on Tyrone's show for 8 hours a night.
No, I'm not.
Well, not you, but why would they do 8 hours a night?
But I will take a break and do something,
and then
call back and listen. But actually,
get a rub down, just like a good boxer. Do a couple rounds. Go to the show. Pull yourself back in the corner. You know, get watered up, get rubbed down and stuff. You know, all that stuff.
Well,
a little grease on your face and back
I,
and
I
back.
Well, it's a really popular show. And when you
Mike
call,
Burns,
you might have.
I want you to listen to this, is Michael. What I want you to listen to what I have to say is that I will always allow you to be on the show. And I want to tell you that in many ways it reminds me of a movie that's out there. It's called Groundhog Day.
Yeah,
with Bill Murray. I'm not familiar with it, though.
Yeah, Bill Murray.
Every day he wakes up, it's the same.
Yeah, he was a reporter. He was a reporter guy. He was a reporter.
Well, the hood
Groundhog Day. It was called Groundhog Day.
Now, which one of you gentlemen knows the name of the groundhog that comes out and looks to see if his shadow's there?
Well, I heard about Jackass, you know, with the guy from Jackass.
You just cut him off. You're right, Vern. It's Punxsutawney Phil. Very good. Very, very good. Very, very good.
What's the guy from Jackass when they told me he was about to piss on the hall, the damn
Johnny Knoxville. That stuff
Johnny
on
Knoxville
Jackass.
That
has to be some of the funniest shit there is. There's no way you can watch that stuff and not laugh.
No, Bam Margera.
He's the skateboarder. Bam. He goes in there and beats up his dad in the middle of the night. That has to be some of the funniest stuff.
That was back in 2001. That was for people that don't really know about
those,
it. That was back in
those movies are so funny. Good grief.
Yeah.
And the little wee man and Johnny Knoxville, and they do these things. They do the stupidest things.
Wee man was the guy from Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory. He had a little the Oompa Loompas. He was the Oompa Loompa, and he had a little skateboard and stuff. He used to ride around Oompa Loompa.
The new one, but Jackass would cheer anybody up. Any of those movies. That guy Steve-O.
I wish Bob.
You know Steve-O. Steve-O had to go into drug rehab. He was out of control.
Oh yeah.
And when he got out of rehab, they said, "Are you going to be doing any more of those movies soon?" He said, "Are you crazy?" He said, I can't believe I did any of that stuff. He said, I was wasted out of my mind every time they made me do some of that crap.
Yeah, because Steve-O was drinking, Steve-O was sniffing gasoline. He was sniffing that little tank stuff that he had. It wasn't gasoline, though, but he was sniffing that shit, and that was making his ass go kind of crazy.
Oh, we did
one,
a lot
one,
of major
one. I got another caller on the line here.
Oh, I hope it's Tyrone. Is that Tyrone?
I hope it's somebody smart.
Please let it be Tyrone. I want to talk Tyrone. I want to talk to him because he mutes
I doubt it's Tyrone.
Tyrone will let other people come to his show, but he talks about other people's shows though. But he won't let you talk about his show. I hate to talk about other people's shows and you don't.
You're
let
gonna have to
talk
find a way to get
show.
Over it.
No, it's called I'll Shut His Show Down. I'll shut his shit down, dog.
Why would you do that? I would
do it, but I'm not going to do it. I mean, I'm going to talk. I can talk for 8 hours every damn day. I mean, shit.
All you have to do to make him go away is just not call into a show.
Off.
That's all you got to do.
I listen for an hour, and that's it. After the hour, I'm done. After the hour, it ain't shit to listen to, man.
Michael Hood, I'm going to tell you something. We had a conversation about this toward the end of the show this afternoon. Is if you're not putting a needle in your own arm, if you're putting a needle in your own arm, just stop doing it. If you can't stand Tyrone's show, quit going there. It's but what we also came up with is this whole thing is like crack in its own way. It's a legal crack. It's a different kind of addiction. It can suck the time out of your life, but it won't make your teeth fall out, I don't think. Not unless you're beating your face against the desk or something. But, you know, it's addictive. It sneaks up on you. Pretty soon you find, I'm just going to check in for a little bit. And then you look at the clock, and, oh, my God, 3 hours have gone by. Oh, well, I just listened to this last OP. Shit, it's 6 hours. Oh, fuck, the show's almost over. Where else can I go?
I think that's what made it so fun when I first called in to another show and got around this group of people is when I told them that I was in jail.
Yeah, you did that for about 6 months. You told them that you was in jail for 6 months.
At least a couple. Well, you know, if you got a good line of bullshit, you can carry on with it. But it's a good way to pass the time.
It's addictive, and the better you are at it, the better the more they pick up your stories, the smoother your delivery. It's addictive. You become very professional, like an actor.
I've been slinging bullshit around far before BTR. It's just another outlet.
It's because you're dumb as fuck. That's what it is, Vern.
There are some people that take everything for face value. And, sometimes I'm serious, and then a lot of the times I'm joking around, and you can't figure out which because I don't know when it's coming.
They don't know you. I know you for 2 years. I know you for 2 years and a half.
I haven't been around for two years.
Yeah, you've been around for 2 years.
Opening piece on time. We have a time alteration on BTR that people have been around for 2 years. No, they haven't been around for 2 years. I've been hearing you for 10 years. No, it hasn't been around that long. This is a very strange
place. It hasn't been 2 years.
You've been around for 2 years.
No, it was probably October that I start. Introduced myself in this group. I was on BTR, but it was on a different network.
Michael, this is the Beasley story. See, I know this. I got this from heaven. I fell to my knees and prayed last night. Beasley's only been on, he hasn't been on 2 years. He's only been on 1 year, 362 days.
Yeah.
Vern. Vern, until you got cut off of Perry's show, until Perry knocked his ass off.
You were right there cheering him on, like, yeah, you did the right thing. Poor Perry lost it. You know, Ron Reck brought that up the other day. Because, you know, I was listening to Ron Reck's show.
Yeah, I was on Ron Reck's show.
And he was drunk as a skunk. And I wasn't going to call him, but I just was listening. He said, I hate Beasley. I hate him. And then I called in and asked him why he hated me, and he was got pretty defensive. And what it came down to, he said he hated me because I interrupted people. Hated me.
Can you troll him?
He said, I hated me. And then he explained a little more. He said, I remember when you called in there and said that you were in jail and you were in prison and, you know, I didn't believe you. I didn't believe
you.
You
told
you
know. His ass, Beasley, didn't you? I mean,
well, it was
Perry.
He just was hanging on.
I know
what him
and Perry. You told him, but you came with some, I mean, you talked to him.
How did I know that I would ever call one of these shows again? I just saw a lot of people there, and I decided to call in, and I just did what I did. It's a joke.
You know what, Beasley? You can ask Ocean that. Ask Ocean and Jackie and all that bullshit. Ask the stupid ass motherfuckers like Ocean and damn Jackie. I'm sorry, Brown, but these people are
that's
stupid.
Okay.
Jackie,
you know why?
Jackie,
I do this show on the weekends, don't you? You know why I do this show Saturday and Sunday night? That way the NSA knows where you guys are.
But Vern, why would the NSA waste their time? Why would the NSA waste their time on fucking Tyrone fucking All Talk Radio? It's called All Talk Solutions. It ain't called Real Talk. It's called All Talk.
Well, they don't necessarily waste their time. They just apparently they're archiving everything. Just about everything that's done on the net. Can you imagine them watching after? You just interrupt everybody, huh?
No, go ahead, talk. I'm sorry.
Can you imagine them tracking all the text messages and the emails? Can you imagine the kind of job that is? Even if it's done by machines, just maintaining it?
But they're not even by no machines, Beasley. All they do is call algorithm. Algorithms, all they do is they have one person by one computer, and that goes into the algorithm, and they find out what you say is keywords that you say. It ain't like damn 20 or 30 people in a damn fucking office, and they know what you're saying.
That's not my understanding. I understand what algorithms are, but they have with Prism and this other thing, this other backdoor thing, they're accumulating data, everything that happens, every text message they're aware of.
Yeah. But they don't have to sit there and try to sit there and take their whole
time. No, they know where to access the information when they want it. And I guess they have to make sure.
What do you think about their logarithms that they use to analyze the algorithms?
Who knows? Got my carpets clean today. It smells great.
You have no idea what logarithms they use to analyze the algorithms.
No, I don't know.
I don't know the difference between an algorithm and an algorithm.
But,
like bits and bytes.
Algorithm is certain words that you say. Like if you say bomb, or you say I'm a threat to the government, take government
right.
Bomb, or I'm a terrorist. Them words go in the key system, then it comes back to the system that the guys that are watching the system. So when they hear that word.
I think that's pretty old technology. That might be 10-year-old technology. They're far more advanced from that.
Oh, they way advanced in that, man. They just play with y'all, man. They play with y'all like y'all stupid. But you know, most people are sheeples. If you want
I think you're
sheeple,
talking about the heuristics that they use to do them.
But yeah, you sheeple.
It's your fundamentally pattern is pattern recognition. They got things that they look for, patterns, word strings, stuff like this. And, you know, when they look for, they use heuristics to scan for viruses and malware. That even though they might not have discovered something, a lot of the software that make these things up follow certain routines, try and do certain things. They access the operating systems in a variety of ways. They look for execution commands and stuff like that to screen for malware in the software, you know, because it's almost impossible to know every bad bug that's out there. So I'm sure there's a variety of heuristics, and that's one of the problems, is I've often said there's just so much data coming in. I don't believe that they can screen it all, but I am concerned by the fact that if you trip the wrong button, you'll never get out of the system. You know, you're trying to do your kids' homework problem, you know, a homework assignment to do a report on 9/11. And you put in Al-Qaeda with the right search terms, and you trigger something that says these are the things that terrorists are looking for, and pretty soon you're being watched and everything's being stored there, and all of a sudden they come knock at your door and say, what's going on, you know? And you never get rid of that stuff. Things are backed up every place. You never know what kind of restorals are there, and we don't even know. We don't even know. That's the other thing I didn't hear. Hear him ask the IRS guy is, are you telling me you destroyed a hard drive that wasn't backed up? Where are the backups to that drive? Did they ask him that? On a different note, there.
I mean, I can have a hard drive. And I can have a system that you wouldn't even never find out by my system, because once you go and try to find out my hard drive is flipping over 1,500 different ways. So, I mean, it's like you have a, like, what is my hard drive? It's going back and forth for so many different hard drives. It's like you wouldn't even know who my hard drive is. It'd be like just a crazy maze. Like, damn, is this it? You see one thing, you see another thing, you just see another thing, it just flips. It flips. Keeps on flipping. You won't understand. You won't know what's going on because there's so many damn IP addresses that's going on left and right. You won't never know. I mean, that's how certain hackers work. You won't know. Because when you're not hacking on one system. The system's going to be flipping left and right. It's going to keep going. It's going to be moving. It's going to be moving left and right and this and that. You're like, oh, what the hell? What are you talking about? You're not going to know what the system that looked up. You might take one damn IP address, and the IP address come up, and there's another IP address come up, and they just flip back and around.
I just got VPN the other day. My little tech guy came in and showed me and gave me a VPN program so that I can... So that the trolls don't really
You gotta be a true hacker to this shit, man. Because I mean, you know what? I'll tell you, I'm a hacker. I bet you won't find no information on me. I bet you if you go to my IP address and you go ahead and hook up to my IP address, I bet you when you hook up to my IP address, I'll take all the information that you got on my IP address. Because you end up on my IP address and you went into a brick wall. Once you run into that brick wall, I got all the information that you got because you ran up on me. Don't run up on me. Because I can take the brick wall that you run up on me and take your firewall and set your firewall down when you run up on me. See, I'm telling y'all some shit I ain't even talking about. When you take your little firewall that you got, I will bypass your firewall when you come into my mainframe. You try to hack into me, my firewall will go ahead and take your firewall and bring your firewall into my sector and shut your sector down because you didn't understand. I ain't going to tell you what it is because you came into my firewall. My firewall knows your firewall. Just know that. That's all you got to know. And when your firewall comes out, I know your credit card number. I know your Social Security number. I know everything that you have. You can't do shit. The government can come right now. Oh, you did this, Mike? You can't. Because all my shit's cleared off. I'm cleared. They can go to my house right now. Hear me on Blog Talk right now? What are you going to do, government? You can't do shit to me. You come right now. Won't find no nothing. Won't find shit. Run your damn mouth, y'all. run your mouth all you want to, man. It's some real shit what these hackers do, man. Hackers are really, truly going to your guys. That's when I call your show, Vern. I call your show, Vern. There were some hackers on your damn show, man. I told them who I was. They hung up on me. They said, "You know what? Hell no."
That's why I got the VPN. I let the VPN, the program, I let it pick a random location, and it changed my Yahoo page to some other language. I think it was Romania or something.
It doesn't matter, BZ, man. These hackers, man, they're so damn smart, man. It doesn't matter what you know, man, because I'm telling you, they'll get in that shit. The only thing I tell you how you do not, for them not to get in your shit, do not go ahead. Like, I done had 600 damn shit tell me that I don't want $1 million. I had Google. They gave me, I need your phone. This is what they tell you. I need your phone number. I need your birth certificate. I need your social security number. I need your ID. I done had that shit 300 times. This is how they catch people. And this going over to Nigeria and all that shit. It's going all across the world. They try to look to get your damn, they'll tell you, you know what, you want $1 million. Your email address has won $1 million. And they'll tell you that they need your phone number, they need your address, they need your email address, they need your damn birth certificate, they need all this. You tell them, you don't even answer that shit, man. Especially, Vern, when you answer 661 numbers, don't even answer 6661 numbers with Skype. Because they are the ones. These people will go ahead and take all your info. They're the ones that will go ahead and go into your virus and take over your show. They will take over your show because if you certain 6661s do not answer at all, man. Because man, this is more criminal with drugs, man. This shit is going more crazier than drugs. It's like it's a cyber kinetic mafia that's going on with the internet. It ain't even about drugs no more. It's about getting your information. And these people will get your information because you have a lot of old people that will be like, oh, damn, I won $1 million. And they'll get their whole information over. You even got young people that will get their information over. All they need is your damn ID. They need your phone number. They need your address. And they'll take your damn ID. Once you send an ID, photo ID of yourself, they'll take your ID and put another picture on that ID and go ahead and make it like that was them. They would do this. This is what's going on right now, man. Because they would take your picture. They will cut your picture out now. They will take your picture out, but they'll put their picture on the ID with all your information. They'll cut your picture out and put your picture on the ID of all your information, who you are, where you live at, what job you work, what's your phone number, what's your ID, what's your address, and put it all in there. And they'll take all that information, and one day you'll wake up in the morning and the damn some solicitor or something asking, you know what, you paid fucking $25,000. You paid $25,000. This is your shit. You better pay this shit off. And that wasn't even you. Because you gave your information over to these people, and they take your information and go ahead and use it and try to get all the money that they can get from you. Man, I get that shit fucking 25 times a day. I get people from Nigeria telling me, you know what, you won a fucking $2 million. I need all your damn information. I mean, get the fuck out of here.
You know why you're getting all those calls from Nigeria, Michael?
Wow.
I think that Beasley gave him your number.
Oh, Beasley gave him my number, Beasley? Nah, Beasley didn't get my number, no.
That's really not a responsible thing to do, Vern.
That's a terrible thing to say.
I made it real clear in my assessment of him. That's a very irresponsible thing to do.
To be real talk. They got all your information. The mother countries Sudan.
Here's the question, Michael, slow down a second. And the question I have for you is how come you're getting all the Nigeria calls?
I guess they want to be like me.
I have gotten some of the Nigeria emails. I don't think I've gotten any Nigeria calls. I just want to know what you're doing right that you're getting all the Nigeria calls.
Because they know I ain't stupid. That's one thing I go ahead and play their ass. I go and set them up for a little scheme. I said, I even call them. I call them on an unknown number and call their ass. They'll act a fool. They're like, what? What? What are you talking about? I go ahead and play games on their ass. They know, don't fuck with that guy. But they still send it, though. I mean, I tell you, I get about, like, 50 a day. I get 50 a day, but it goes in my spam folder, like on my Gmail. Like on Google,
uh-huh.
I go in my spam folder and stuff like that. But most of them I don't really check. But if I do go look at my spam folder and check them, and I got a lot from them say that you won this amount of money. I had one guy tell me that I was with the United Nations and they had a serial thing going on and some distress or something. And they tell me, well, you just got to give me your information and all that. Man, I get them left and right, man. I get all of them, but there is some people in America that are gullible that will give their information up to these people. So you just have to watch out for them people, man. It's not no joke, man. If you know about trying to get in people's systems and stuff, man, it's not a joke, man. It's really not a joke because I can't tell you any damn thing. I just tell you, you know what? I just get in my system on my own system. I hack in my own shit. That's all I do. I mean, if you don't know about computers, you better learn about computers.
I've got two 111s up here. If you want to say anything, your mics are hot. I just want to let you know that. You got your hands up if you want to jump in here.
But you got to understand, though. You can come to my house. You can call the police and everything. And you can come to the police and search my house, but you won't find shit. Because I ain't did nothing wrong. I haven't did nothing wrong. I can speak my freedom of fucking Second Amendment right. I can talk all damn day, but you won't find shit on me if you come to my house. Can't find shit. I can talk all day. I can talk for fucking Vern. I can talk for 6 hours straight, and I can tell you I did this to you, I did that. But if you come to my house, you won't find nothing. You can't do it. It's against the law. It's against the law for you to come to my house. I don't give you consent to search my house. You can come with it. You're talking about, I got a search warrant. You don't have no search warrant because you don't have no probable cause to even go into my house to even search my damn house. How can you sit there and say that you have a probable cause when you don't have no probable cause? See what I'm saying? That's what people got to understand about the IRS. You got to understand about the laws. The IRS, when the IRS said you have to pay taxes, you don't have to pay no damn taxes. It's called consent. It's called voluntary. You don't have to pay fucking taxes. I don't understand why people get caught up in laws and these celebrities and everything get caught up in where you don't have to pay no taxes. It's called consent. Like me right now, if I'm a natural law citizen, I don't even have to have a driver license. I don't even have to have a damn insurance for me to drive at all. I don't have to have that because it's a natural law. Once you know the law of what the government has not told you, you can do anything you want. You can. But we've been caught up in the system. Oh, this is what you're going to do. This is what you got to abide by. But no, you don't have to abide by that shit. I can ride all day without a license. I can drive without insurance. You see what I'm saying? They have put us back. Once you put your damn tank, once you take your car and put it into that gas pump, once you put that gas pump in your damn car, you have submitted over to the corporation of corporations, saying like that you paid your damn shit over and get your gas to put in your damn
car.
You don't have to do that shit, man.
Good evening.
How you doing?
Doing good.
Well,
I guess we got Tyrone Show coming over. Tyrone Show, they done left Tyrone Show. Now they're coming over here.
Well, it's kind of hard to get in here because we just went into overtime. But whoever got in is already in. I got 311s. Good, take it away. I've been listening to Michael Hood long time. Is it Oz?
All I can say is, yeah.
Jay, what Jay, do you have to go to when you go to gas pump? Do you when you pump your gas, isn't that called corporation law?
I don't know. I don't have a car.
You'll have. So
not in New York.
We take. What does that tell you?
A lot of us take the train.
What did that tell you about y'all Americans? Y'all, everybody is American citizen. Don't give a fuck what color you is, who you're white, you're black, you're Hispanic, or whatever you is. You are part of the American corporation system. You have a birth certificate. And your birth certificate is worth, what, $250,000. Your birth certificate, and you look at your license, is in capital letters. Capital letters means your shit means you already dead. You're dead already. So we can talk about this shit like we need people to come together. We're going to start our own government. White people going to do this. Black people going to do this. Ain't no black or white people ain't going to do shit because the government knows that y'all are fucking stupid. And y'all ain't going to do shit but run your damn fucking mouth because when the shit hits the fucking fan, and when the lights cut off and you ain't got no lights, you ain't got no gas, what you gonna do? Run? You can't run your mouth no more. You can't get on Blog Talk Radio. Let me call on Blog Talk. I'm gonna call Vern Show. I'm gonna call Tyrone Show. I'm gonna call these shows up. I'm gonna tell them how I feel. You can't do that no more. What you gonna do, cuz? What you gonna do? You gonna be a fighter, or you gonna be a bitch and just hide up in your damn under your bed or some shit like that? This is some real shit that's going on. Don't run your mouth on Blog Talk Radio and talk your shit like you gonna change something when ain't shit gonna fucking change. I tell everybody that shit. White, black, or who the fuck you is, you ain't gonna change nothing. You just talking. You running your fucking mouth. Because when the lights cut off, the lights fucking cut off with an EMP attack. If you look at what's going on in Iraq right now, you better be lucky that ISIS had been, the Iraqi government had took over the damn ISIS oil field that the ISIS had taken over, and they took it over and they shut it down. You lucky that the Iraqi government had took over the oil field that ISIS took over. You better be lucky because you know what? Gas would have been fucking $8 or $9 right now. Be lucky that they did it. Be lucky that Iran is saying that they ain't not fighting against no damn Iraq and ISIS because American fucking government has been fucking volunteering to go ahead and fight the truth, go ahead and give weapons to fucking ISIS and Al-Qaeda and to the damn Syrian fucking rebels. The only way this war is going on right now that's about to start in Iraq because they're going ahead and go ahead and take over fucking Syria because they know the dollar is collapsing. The dollar is collapsing. The only way they're doing this is because they know. They had to fucking let y'all dumbass Americans and fucking European fucking people let y'all know over there, and Asians don't give a fuck because they're the communism, let you know that we are fucking abiding by the rules of fucking chaos. It's called order out of chaos. So y'all can talk your shit on Blog Talk Radio all goddamn day and talk about what you're going to do and what you're going to change, but you ain't going to change shit. What you need to do is go ahead and wake your ass up and tell the people that live next door to you and people down the street from you, you know what? Shit might hit the damn fan. What are you going to do to make shit change in your damn fucking community? You can't change shit on Blog Talk Radio. Can't talk. You can talk all damn goddamn day on Blog Talk Radio. What are you going to do to change
your
know,
things? You're doing a very good job of talking all goddamn day.
talk, Beasley. Yeah. Fucking talk. Talk. Shit, what are
actually,
you
it's
saying?
Not quite talking. It's rambling, Michael.
I mean, none of y'all live by me. None of y'all live in my community. Y'all not going to change none
no,
of my
that's
community.
True.
I mean, chill. Well, y'all can talk all damn day you want to, but you're not changing nothing in my community. So, I mean, How do y'all feel about
So Michael, slow down. Be with me a second. Man, you know, given that's the premise, nothing's going to change anything, Blog Talk Radio or anything like that, then why don't we just accept Blog Talk Radio for what it may in fact be, is nothing more than entertainment, a diversion, a way for people to spend time while, you know, while the EMPs are being built. And why don't we enjoy it until all the EMPs are released and everything's taken down? It'll all be over then. There'll be panic and riots in the streets, you know. If they launch an EMP that knocks out all the grids and stuff, about the best thing you can do is enjoy whatever entertainment you had on Blog Talk Radio and be prepared to hit the hills or learn how to make fires with whatever resources you have available to you. You know, what you're saying is about as powerful as saying that we can do something. I don't know that they make any difference. So what advice do you have to people, you know, and for those of you who don't know what an EMP is, and it, yeah, I'm sure that you do, it's an electromagnetic pulse. And what happens is when you explode an atomic weapon up in the atmosphere, you can pretty much, it generates an electrical pulse. An electromagnetic pulse, in fact, that has the capabilities of blasting transistors and unhardened chips. And very few systems are hardened. They've known about this since World War II and earlier. Everything comes to a standstill. So the problem that you have then is, since we're so reliant on computer technology, and even the military is reliant on electronics, they buy off-the-shelf chips that are not hardened and not resistant to these things. Things that rely on computer-type technology and integrated circuits wind up being blasted. You want to see there? I can't remember the program. It was on Discovery. You know, it's scary. They show you experiments with this, where you take a car, set off an EMP pulse, and everything goes dead. You know, you can't roll down the windows.
Are you talking about that? Are you talking about that where it show like solar flares or solar rays, like?
Yeah, solar flares
destroys
have that capability.
The satellites. Yeah, I seen that.
And so what happens is, you know, this is not like a generator going out, or this is not like a nuclear power plant meltdown. You start knocking down the whole grid. Your cars on the freeway have all their the newer ones that have integrated chips on their computers and stuff. Things come to a dead standstill. Your hospitals can't run. Your medical equipment goes down. You can't get groceries to the grocery stores. You can't pump gas. You can't do anything. And it's not kind of like you can isolate it and fix the area that was hit. It's like if the whole country's brought down like that, you got some really serious problems. Real serious problems.
What do you got to do with them? You have to get certain folks that's in your neighborhood. I mean, it could be the guy next door to you or three houses down. You could have some homeboys that you know, man. You've been together, man. Y'all hustle the block. You just get together, have food, have water, or anything. Maybe you need water to give to somebody else. You know what I'm saying? Because you're going to have crazy people out here that's not going to give a fuck about who the fuck you are. If you don't know how to fight and you don't know how to shoot, they're going to go ahead and take your ass over. And that's how it's going to be, man. That's why you have to know survival skills, and you know at the same time that if you're in the city, you have to know how to fight too. You got to know how to fight, man, because you're going to have people that you might be the person, you know what, I'm trying to look out for all these people, man. I got water for everybody, but you might have a group of some homeboys that run up on your ass. Give me your fucking shit, man. Give me your damn water. That's my shit. What the fuck are you going to do? And then be just ready to fight your ass and punch you in your damn face. What you going to do? How are you going to fight against these people? Because people are going to act a fool now. That's why the government, the Pentagon, has put out there for zombies of the apocalypse. They didn't put out zombies of the apocalypse as being like you're a zombie, like the fucking Night of the Dead or the Walking Dead. They made the zombies of the dead as mean you're brain dead. You're stupid. You don't know what the fuck going on. That means you have people out there that's running crazy.
You're on a roll again, Mikey. You're on a roll again. I need to interrupt you and stuff. For what it's worth, actually, the government does have a zombie apocalypse site. And you know, and you know why they maintain it is because people go to it, and it's got, you know, emergency procedures for natural disasters. They put it because with the wait, Michael. After with The Walking Dead and all that, it got people's attention so good. I just was reading about that about 2 months ago in terms of their site, and that's why they call it that, because it's an eye catcher. It gets people to the site to look at, you know, what to prepare for in a national emergency. Now, if you have an electromagnetic pulse, Michael Hood, one of the problems with that is that you are talking about things that are problematic for a long period of time, and meager amounts of water stored up probably aren't even going to cut it. And you run into, you know, you're only as prepared, as you say, as your whole neighborhood is, because we've all seen it in the movies. Listen, I'll tell you what, you remember when Y2K hit, I got thinking about that. If the neighborhood's not prepared, you know, I walk out on day six and I don't look like as haggard, like I'm losing weight like everyone else is. Everyone's going, guy there, but he got some food or water.
You could say it's like 90.
How come he beat?
What's all that about?
I don't know. No, I didn't say it was. I was just going down the lines there to see which one it was. It was someone waiting for the right time to jump in there.
Well, I'll say this much. 85 to 90% of the people probably in the urban or suburban areas, you know, are basically, hostage to the water system, you know, and just the basics. I mean, unless you're running your own water pipeline.
Absolutely.
You got people with electricity.
Now, if you're in New York, all your fucking water lines will be shut down, so y'all won't have no damn water. Because, you know, if an EMP attack happens, everything shuts down. You don't have water no more.
That can happen anywhere.
Anywhere, that's what I'm saying.
90% of the places all over the United States, I mean, you know.
But not. Like, if you're in the city, not. Like, if you're in the woods, like, you know, if you go upstate New York will survive. They will survive.
Well, upstate New York still runs through the line. We actually get our water from upstate. That's what I'm saying. Unless you got something like that. But look, you're talking about electricity. If it shuts down, you know, then they shut everything down. So electricity runs the water, right? So, I mean,
I would say
85 to 90% of the people will fall hostage to the system, unless you are one of those, you know, the very few, let's say in every city or neighborhood, maybe one person or two people, you know, in every neighborhood or community that you think actually is self-sufficient, where they don't depend on any of the, you know, they got electricity maybe in multiple ways, not only in solar, but, you know, might have some other means. And then you might have, they run their own water filtration system. But it's rare. I mean, people still, you know, running through
that
a system.
That won't work. Cause you know why that won't work? Because if you look at the future Navy maps has fucking Los Angeles, almost half of California, Chicago, New York, Miami, Atlanta, Chicago. You have Memphis. All these in Texas, Houston, Texas, all these people will call major martial law, because they don't have no water and no more filtration no more. They will go out here and have a war against the damn government. So these cities will go out here and riot. They will have riots. You have riots in California. You have riots in Chicago. You have riots in New York. You have riots in Atlanta. You have riots in damn Miami. You have riots in damn Memphis. All these Houston. All these cities will go ahead and act a fool. They'll go flip because they don't have water or food. because, you know, 3 days, the food situation will be shut down. You don't have food in 3 days. How would you eat? You can go to the grocery store like, I'm just going to the grocery store and try to get some food. You go down there and all the damn aisles are empty. How are you? That just happened in my state. Down here we had a damn grocery store called Reed's. Reed's that was part of Food Lion. Reed's, when we come down here to Reed's, the whole damn fucking food store is empty. It's all empty. I felt like I was in the fucking New World Order right now because everything was empty. How would you survive? How would you eat? How would you fucking feed your damn family? But you know what? You're not going to have to feed your family because the government is going to send you to internment camps. I ain't going to call it FEMA camp. It's called internment camp, like they did the damn Japanese. When the Japanese in World War II and stuff, when he had Japanese camps and all that, and they sent them to Japanese camp, that's what's going to happen to Americans. They know Americans are not going to fucking... They know America's going to fight back. Because look at the laws. Obama, look at all this shit with damn guy from damn fucking Santa Barbara. Guy from Santa Barbara and shooting guns and his father talking about damn the ARE, talking about the National Rifle Association, talking about we don't need no guns. Look what happened in Australia. Obama said this shit 2 days ago, talking about the guys in Australia, somebody, you know what? We're taking all the guns away. That's what we need to do in America. We need to take everybody's guns away. But you know what? You can't take everybody's guns away. You cannot take everybody's guns away. Don't even care if it's fucking illegal. You can have a legal gun.
Michael, sir, do you constantly say the same shit every week?
No.
You're boring as fuck.
Week.
I'm sitting here patiently waiting for you to talk to something.
Beasley,
did you hear me bring up the reference to Groundhog Day, the Bill Murray movie?
Yeah, I remember.
You know the premise of that movie, don't you? Every day he woke up, it was the same day as the day before.
Right.
It's the same morning, same alarm clock, same time, same people. In that movie, things changed a little bit. I'm just telling Michael.
Diane Feinstein said the same damn shit. She said that we need to take a people a fucking semi-automatic weapons away from them. Semi-automatic. If you have an M14 or you have an M16 and it's semi-automatic, they need to take it away from you because it's a threat. It's a threat to the American population. So if you
any state that allows you to have a gun legally is really
crazy.
Negligent.
They don't
negligent.
Care about your damn legal rights. They don't care because y'all stupid Americans. Y'all dumb. Y'all don't care about what the rights are. All y'all care about is the love and hip-hop and fucking me, and Nico. Oh, that's all y'all care
and
about.
And add in Talk Real
no
Solutions.
White people don't
your,
give a fuck
add
about
in your,
shit.
Add in your guilty pleasure. Which is
white
Talk Real
sit
Solutions.
Around, white people sit around like, you know what? My rights is good. I don't give a fuck about nothing. You know they don't give a fuck about who you are? They want your fucking they want your guns away from you. They're telling you right now. That's why
God bless you, Michael. I'm going to bring you up in a little bit, but I'm going to monologue here for a little bit. Our secret weapon. I don't know why we ever waterboarded. All we had to do is turn Michael Hood loose in there with them prisoners, and I'll bet you they would have said anything. Michael, you're so cute, but here's the question. Here, I'm going to bring you up. Okay, I got it. All the stupid Americans. They only want you are like the prophet on the street corner that no one wants to listen to you. Now, two questions are going to come up here for you, and I'm going to see how focused you can stay. Is A, what do American people do, and how do we expedite it being done? So it takes place. That's what I'm going to ask you. That's the question you're going to get. is okay, doom and gloom, the world's going to hell in a handbasket, we're all fucked. Stormbites, who was on a couple weeks ago, made that comment. He was caught up in Sandy, and he talked about what an eye-opener that was when you're caught in an area that depends on centralized services like they did in New York when Sandy hit, and all those things go down. He did a couple of shows on that. He talked about how it's really spooky when you see people lined up for a mile behind at a gas station that's empty, has no gas to give anybody, and you ask them, well, what are you doing? Why are you lined up here? Because what else are we going to do? Like, what else are we going to do is going to make any difference? There ain't no gas there. You can do anything you want. You can stand in that line as long as you want. You can put your car to the head of the line. There ain't no gas there. Electricity's out. You can't, you know, even if there was gas, you can't power the pumps. So I'm going to bring you up. Now we know the problem. Now we know you have been like the apocalyptic preacher on the street corner. And you do it on a regular basis, and you do it good. Now, what do people do to prepare for the apocalypse? How can you make things happen? How can you, you know, what's left? If there's nothing left, then what I say, as I said earlier, kick back, enjoy BTR and the circus it is for as long as you can. And when the shit hits the fan, you're all going out. Some of us are going to be here a little longer than others. Yeah, the food's going to run out in 3 days. The supermarkets are going to be empty. What was ever in the freezers is all going to, you know, what's not eaten is going to be gone because there's going to be no electricity to power the freezers. So that food's going to spoil within less than a month. There ain't going to be nothing around. You're not going to be able to pump water. If you find people that have wells, you might be able to hook up hand pumps, but that's not going to be enough to feed my area. It's going to look grim. It's going to be grim. Maybe the only thing that's going to do anything is going to be at the federal level where the military might still be able to run, might have gas reserves, might be able to fly in supplies and waters at least to try and keep the riots down. Now, I'm going to turn it over to you, and I want some focus regarding what people can do, how they can prepare, because as I said earlier, if I'm prepared and none of my neighbors are, I might have food for 6 months, but you know, I got a lot of people that live around me. When they see that I'm not wasting away, I don't look haggard, just like the movies. Burning over there. He's not looking as haggard. What's sustaining him? He must have a stash of food. Let's go over there and find out what the hell he got. So if they're not prepared, my food's only going to last till they decide that, you know, I'm only looking good because I got supplies. They're going to come here, and I can't store up and stock up enough to feed everybody. What do we people need to do, and how long do we need to prepare for? Because how long do you think we can withstand the damage from an electromagnetic pulse? Go, 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 go. You're up. Make good use of your time.
First, what people got to understand is that first you got to wake up. You got to understand what's going on, man. Because if you look at it right now, if you look at what's going on in Texas, that they're flooding the gates for immigration that are coming to America right now. They're flooding it more than anything that ever happened. Obama shut it down. Obama shut the immigration down. You got almost 40,000 people that's coming across the border.
Michael, we got 1 month, 30 days to prepare for this pulse. We know that right now. What are we going to do in 30 days? You're going to focus on, you're going to try and hammer your legislatures to shut down those borders. What can people do right now, which is in the realm of doability reality?
Okay.
I understand. Go.
Well, to be honest with you, you better tuck your damn tails. You better have fucking water. You better have ammunition. And you better know how to hunt. Because there won't be no more food no more in grocery stores. Okay? There won't be no more gas. There won't be gasoline or anything. You better know how to hunt. That's just the first thing I tell you, man. You can go there and play like it's funny, but you better know how to hunt.
No. I'm dead serious, Michael. I'm not playing like it's funny, because the next question I'm gonna ask you is: you live in New York City, San Francisco, Los Angeles. How effective are you going to be at hunting to bring home food?
Well, I live in South Carolina.
I know. Well, listen. You got it all together. You're not the one to be worried about. You're bringing the apocalypse to all of us now on this show, right? On the Psycho Corral here. You got it all handled. You're all taken care of. But you're telling us about the apocalypse. So what do people do that are in the cities? I'm going to tell you something right now. That everyone that lives in the Santa Cruz area or San Francisco isn't going to be able to move out of cities and get all set up. How are they going to hunt?
Well, first you better have a bug out bag. It's called a bug out bag. If you ever heard of a bug out bag, that means a bug out bag for you to have food, water, and essentials, antibiotics and stuff like that and all that. And you better have a gun on you. Because you better have a bug out bag to get out of the city. Because if you're in the city and you're stuck in the city, you will get caught up in martial law. You will get up and get called against the damn United Nations. It's called United Nations that will come to your damn city. But if you got in the country and get up in the woods and stuff, you can survive in the woods. You have animals out there, whatever you live at, because I don't know where most of y'all live at, but you have different animals, you have water. You even have plants. If you know how to survive in the woods, you'll know about different plants. You'll know about different animals. You know about different ammunition that you have to do to go and shoot this person, this damn animal. Like if a deer come up, maybe I just need one damn bullet to shoot a deer. If you know how to shoot a deer, you know how to shoot any different animals for you to survive. That you need to survive. It's called a bug out bag. You need a bug-out bag because when the shit hits the fan and when everything shuts down, you're going to be caught. If you're in the city limits, you will be caught up in the damn fucking fucked-up zone. It's called the fucked-up zone. That's what we call it. We call it the fucked-up zone. So when you're in this zone and if you don't get out of this zone before it happens, you will be caught up in the fucked-up zone and your ass will be shipped away. Major cities now.
That might be the only way that you can survive, to tell you the truth, is to be whisked away to one of these FEMA camps you're talking about, and I'm going to tell you why. That might be the only place where there is food.
You know what you get? You get a potato. You get a fucking potato, and the potato is fucking raw. You get a raw potato, and you get a fucking piece of bread. And these
Michael,
people,
do you know what? I'm serious. Do you know what the terrain is in Northern California? Can you tell me where 825,000 people in San Francisco? Where they're going to?
Yeah.
Do you think there are enough deer in the mountains behind San Francisco to feed those people out there hunting for any length of time?
About the terrain of California. It's very hard.
Oh.
It's a hard terrain, man. Because you got
not just the terrain. I don't know that there's 825 enough deer to feed anyone a week.
We'll be okay up here. We'll eat veal and Dungeness crabs and salmon. There's a record salmon catch right now underneath the Golden Gate Bridge. I'm going to go buy some tomorrow.
How would you be cared when it would be a 10.5 earthquake? There will be a 10.5 earthquake.
Everything that you're talking about is never going to happen.
No,
it only happens. It only happens.
You know,
all right,
you're
just not
going to
let anybody get a word in.
Los Angeles all the way down from Santa Monica now. Santa Monica Boulevard.
Now you can talk, Beasley.
No, none of this stuff is going to happen. In our lifetime, there's too many people that think it. I don't see it happening. It could happen. Chances are it won't. There have always been scares out there. How many people built bomb shelters anticipating the nuclear war with Russia? You know, maybe it happens, maybe it doesn't. You need food more. You need water more than you need food. Take it from a person that's fasted. You need. That's all. You need water. None of this stuff's ever going to happen.
And if it does happen, you know, you think of the bright side of all the fun things you did in your life that you enjoyed. It's not promised to anyone. It's all good, however it turns out.
I want to tell you what the bright side is. Is you're facing that last meal that you're ever going to eat, you can smile back fondly and think of the many hours that you spent enjoying Blog Talk Radio and know that all was good.
That would be a deep regret. That would be a deep regret. I wasted time with all these meat fucks. I could have been doing anything. I wasted all of this time when I had my computer in front of me, even though I did learn a lot of things. But I could have studied that. I could have known what the periodic table, all of the things, and being able to recite that. I could have known all the popes in succession. You know, I really could have learned
about
some
quantum
stuff.
Entanglement and how time, you know, time existed.
Time's just interesting, but it was hard for me to catch. It was hard for me to catch on there, but. I don't know that any of these things are going to happen. I don't think in terms of these things happening. You know what? I really have faith. I believe in God. I believe in God. I don't stress out when I have pressure. Always something seems to come through. God truly likes me, truly loves me, and looks out for me. I honestly believe that. And
you
with that
asked
attitude
and you were
of,
given. You went out seeking and you found.
You know I had faith.
And here you are.
Before faith existed, and you've just got to believe. And you know what the mind can conceive and believe, it can achieve. It can manifest that. He is going to have stormtroopers at his door at one time or another. He is focused on that and has put that in out there into the universe. The universe will give him the answer that he wants. It's not going to happen with me. But I wanted to ask you something.
Yes.
I'm not going to ask you what your favorite food is, because that's kind of simple. What are some of your favorite things that you like to eat? Some of the very best things that you like to eat. I'm assuming you grew up in Santa Cruz around the coastal area. You're fond of seafood. What are some of your favorite things?
I like seafood, but I actually grew up in Southern California.
That's even more of a plus for you. So did I. You lived inland though, in Riverside, that area.
Yeah. I lived in the Inland Empire.
Wow. You know, that was the first
place the Rolling Stones played on their first tour of the United States, and at the Orange Show Auditorium. I can't remember what it was called. I'll think about it in a second. But
what was that? 1963,
something like that. Yeah.
I was around, shitting in diapers. But what are
you
some
were?
Of your
you
foods?
Were just. Just a little tyke.
I was shitting in diapers. That's a cute thing, too. But what are some of your favorite things to eat?
Well,
you never answered the question.
Well, that's because I just wanted to make sure that I was not misleading you and let you know that I spent the first major part of my life in Southern California.
Right, I just
so, yeah, you know, I certainly, one of my favorite all-time foods is I really like Mexican food. I really like, and I know it's very simple, but I like Mexican. I love chili rellenos. I like tacos tostadas, refried beans. You know, rice. I like carne asada. I like chili verde. Used to make some great chili verde. I happen to like salmon well. See, you know, I cook salmon a variety. Usually, just roast it in the convection oven. My tastes are pretty simple. there's not much I don't like. But when I came back, I think for the first year after I was back from Vietnam, I probably ate Mexican food probably once a day, almost every day was one of the meals I ate because we didn't have that overseas. It was a summer vacation.
Just kidding.
Yeah, I was in the United States Army in 68 and 69 in Vietnam.
Wow.
What about
you?
Did you eat any German food? Like Schinken noodles?
Yeah, I haven't eaten a lot. I haven't eaten a lot of
German
food.
German food's pretty tasty.
No.
Yeah.
Come on, man. Frankenbrassen. Frankenbrassen.
German potato salad.
They big. They got that. They do got that. But you know
the,
what?
With the red potatoes and the vinegary type thing, it's a different type of potato salad. That stuff's tasty. And a lot of pork and the Schinken noodle. My dad used to make Schinken noodle it'd have ham and the seasoning, and there would be like bigger than fettuccine noodles, whatever you kind of call them. They were about a quarter of an inch wide noodles. That was pretty good. And
I like bulgogi, which is Korean barbecued beef. You know, I used to eat that in Vietnam. They put a bocce on the table and bring out the marinated meat and vegetables and stuff. You throw the meat on the grill and cook it right there. I like Thai food. Doggies.
Could have been.
I'll tell you what, it tasted good.
Well, okay.
You know, what can I say? There again, I chuckled because my wife likes to watch The Amazing Race, so I'll watch that. And one of the challenges they had in the last season is people had to eat a certain amount of cobra meat. I remember they had fish tanks of cobra in there, and you could pick out your own. And I chuckled. I just thought, gotta love those Asians. If it moves, I'll eat it. I wonder what it tastes like.
I've had fried rattlesnake. You ever have any soul food, Vern?
You know, not really. But I think I'd like it. I've had
soul food
in New York.
How about there's so many different things. Some good macaroni and cheese and some collard greens, fried chicken, smothered chicken. Oh, good, smothered chicken. Smothered pork chops, oxtails. Eat oxtails in New York City. You missed out on soul food. You haven't lived. You know what? You should try some soul food. There has to be a soul food restaurant around there somewhere. Or a black black person. You're going to love this stuff.
There's not too many foods I don't like. I like Chinese food. We got good Chinese food around here. You know, we've got a lot of Chinese restaurants around here.
Yeah, but Chinese food is everywhere. In New York, they're
in the
every
hood.
They're in every corner.
Ghetto Chinese food.
Yeah.
Most ghettos have Chinese food. It's a version of Chinese food. Well, I like all of the Asian foods, except maybe Indonesian food.
Thai is probably the best Asian food for me, Thai and Japanese.
Thai is delicious. I've been eating that for a long time with that sweet sauce that has the pepper in it. When you have that on the rice and the chicken, and they make, what else do they make? They make a curry that's pretty good. Thai food's pretty big out here in California, and I'm sure it's spread to New York. Now, New York's a great place as far as food goes. You know, relatives there that live in one of the – it's New York City, but it's one of the obscure parts. And they don't cook, but they order takeout every night, and every night it's good, really good.
Wow, that could be expensive, though.
every night that I was there, I was there for a week. I was there for a week. And it's an aunt, and she just says order.
She just says order.
And I guess that
could be the solution to the EMP. Just eat out every night.
Well, we're eating in, but it's takeout food. But it was delivered, and every time it was really good, really good. Chinese food's good.
Now, I discovered Vietnamese food about 10 years ago. They make this soup. I don't wonder if those places have spread to New York yet. I'm sure they have. I haven't been to New York, but PHO, they call it pho. And it's a soup. It either has a chicken base or it has a beef base. Like the
you know what they used to like to snack on? They used to eat raw snails, snack on them, and you know, pull them out of these little shells, and they'd have big
yuck,
and dip them in this hot sauce and stuff.
Yuck!
See these mamasans on the street.
God, you destroyed it! I'm just talking about something like mouthwatering and delicious, and because they put combination and all kinds of things in the pho. And they make these little roast beef sandwiches with they're kind of spicy with pepper, but they do it on fresh French bread. And you know the French were in Vietnamese. The French were in Vietnam, and they influenced their cooking. Asian food might be among the best.
I mean, we got a good Chinatown out here in New York City.
I'm just thinking all of the other places. Well, Italian food is up there.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Charleston has some good seafood too now.
Oh well, of course.
I was
hush bushy and crabs and shrimp and rice.
But the crab is small though. It was kind of small, man.
This year they were small. They call it. They got shrimps and rice and eat Hoppin' John.
Down in Charleston. Yeah, it's good when you go down like Holly. Beach and stuff. You go to Holly Beach.
I know a little more about Charleston than I let on.
Yeah.
Quite a bit more. I've been to Charleston before a few times.
Yeah, they get it in down here.
You know about
Geechee and all that, man. I ain't even want to get into all that shit. You already know.
I know. Michael Hood.
We had some. We had like damn like 25 damn 25 crabs, but it wasn't big. It was a day like. How you wanted to be, man. The crabs, when we broke them off and stuff, it was kind of like some kind of, like, it wasn't big.
Crabs are a lot of work.
They got
seafood, and they use a lot of okra in South Carolina, too.
Yeah.
The okra with the corn and the tomatoes, the tomatoes, and maybe you could put a little shrimp in it or something, or some sausage. That's a... In Charleston, they call that gumbo, but that's not, well, Creole food.
Good grief.
Gumbo, that's probably the best. That's probably the best that's up there. Your really good seafood gumbo or okra gumbo or shrimp etouffee, jambalaya, and some of the other dishes.
So what's the, you say South Carolina, like Charleston, you got... California, and you got what? I guess New York.
I was thinking of the whole world in terms of, you know, cuisines.
Because I got a homeboy that lives in Maine. He's on the coast of Maine.
Europe food best is Italian.
Italians. My dad says Italians taught the French how to cook.
Jay, you been in Connecticut and stuff like that? You been up there in, like, New Haven and stuff, Stanford and all that?
Yeah.
Been up there, okay. Because I got a homeboy that's in Maine and stuff like this. You see, like,
that's
he's on the
far away.
Yeah, Connecticut is right over. I mean, but it's just like New Haven from here is about 2-3 hours, probably about 2 hours.
Yeah.
A good old American steak is pretty good, too.
Oh, yeah. Don't talk. Tad Steakhouse, New York City.
Where?
Tad Steakhouse.
Oh, that's a common one. I see that all over the place.
They get busy here.
Pretty good. Yeah, it's pretty good. You know, I've seen it. Those are...
Go ahead. I'm sorry, B.
No, you go ahead.
I was telling like Jay, man, up in Stanford and stuff like that, in New Haven, Connecticut. You know they get down right. They get it in right.
Where? Clam chowder.
Food wise,
really good clam chowder is really good.
Rhode Island.
I like the Manhattan clam chowder too. The tomato version, the red version.
Clam chowder in Seattle, Washington.
But only thing on the coast, man, it seemed like
got
the water
really good
is fucking
dead. Got it
dead,
good in
man.
San Francisco.
But Bees, it's like the water is dead around here, man. It seemed like it's so, it's like they complain about that shit. But it's good, though.
But it's not because the old-timers probably complain because they can tell the difference in the coloring and everything from how it was, you know, 50 years ago.
Yeah, they get off the coast now.
That water doesn't look too appetizing. That water doesn't look too appetizing in Los Angeles either along the beaches. You're not seeing, I mean, if you go down to some place like the Caribbean, and even the Caribbean is cloudier than it once was. They said it was from the hurricanes. I remember the first time I really went to the Caribbean was in the 80s, like 86. I went on a vacation to Cancun before they built it all up, and it was still beautiful. And literally, you can walk in the Caribbean in the water, and the sand is white, and the water is crystal clear where you can see your feet perfectly.
Because down here, it's not clear at all, man. If you go like 5 feet out, man, you don't even see your damn legs when you're in the damn ocean. It's like, down here, it's just caught up in that. It's like that grimy water.
It's yucky.
Fucked up around here, man.
People forget. Not too long ago, I mean, all these oil spills and stuff like that.
Right. I was just thinking about the oil spill. That oil spill. That's bad news.
Look down there, and then the sinkhole that's in Bayou Corn. The Bayou Corn sinkhole is fucking 1,200 feet deep.
Oh, yeah.
And it's 45 acres now. 45 acres. People talk about a sinkhole.
Where is it?
It's in Bayou Corn.
Where's Bayou Corn?
It's in Louisiana.
There's a sinkhole that's 45 acres?
Yeah, it's 45 acres. Go look it up right now on YouTube. It's 45 fucking acres.
I'm going to look
acres,
at big sinkholes.
Man.
I always got a kick out of that story, that guy in Florida, where he was in his house in his bedroom sleeping all by himself, just as peaceful as can be, and his house fell so down into the sinkhole they could never recover his body and just said to forget it. Like he went 300 feet down. Is that like a nightmare or what?
No, that's a nightmare, but this sinkhole is fucking 1,200 feet deep. It's 1,200 feet deep, and it's connected to the salt domes to Louisiana. It's a Bayou Corn. If you go look up Bayou
Corn. Are you just blowing some of this conspiracy crazy smoke up my ass?
Go look it up on your damn computer. It's a fucking sinkhole that's fucking 45 acres.
When I get up tomorrow, I'm going to Google, like, big-ass sinkhole in Louisiana.
Hey, why would you see, man? They have a tide. The tide is going back and forth now because it's connected to the ocean. The Louisiana sinkhole is connected to the ocean.
It's in the water.
The earth is like 70% ocean.
But now, look it up, Beezy. Look it up.
I'm gonna look it up.
Funny, I had heard about that a couple. It's not quite.
No, it's true what he's saying.
I know what you're talking about.
I don't know exactly
Mike,
how
I
big
heard
it
about
is,
that
but it's in
day.
The water.
It's at 24 acres and it's sucking up the swamp. It keeps growing and growing. That's the 25
acre
pit will stop growing. It's threatening
been,
a Louisiana town.
I've been following that since 2008. I've been following it since 2008, and it's still growing, man, because that's going to be the major disaster that's going to happen in America. Just look it up. Look it up, the damn.
You're just like a dark. You're just a dark cloud of doom and gloom shit. You're like depressing. You're like,
no, but
Jay,
it's real, though.
How
man.
Much do
it's
they sell
real.
The dirty water Sabret hot dogs in New York for now? What are they, $2?
Yeah.
They're $2 now?
Yeah, remember we used to have that place called Great Papayas?
Yeah, 50
it
cents.
It should be two for that. Yeah, they don't got that no more. You get them for that. Like, maybe one or two of them you get for $1.
That
but
was
they
the $2
place. In any other hot dog play, $2.
Now it's $2 for two of them. They're $1 each. But, yeah, there used to be 50 cent hot dogs, and
right.
They were good. Yeah, papayas. There was one, like, around 14th Street.
Yep, and in a village.
Oh, God, that was a good place. That's a good place to go.
Well, there is good news is you can't buy cigarettes for a quarter a pack anymore out of a machine.
Right, exactly.
go to the
but
Catholic
it was recently
cathedral.
That...
The Catholic cathedral sold you that it would be a fucking tsunami that will hit the whole entire East Coast.
Is that coming before or after the Trump troops? I need to know.
I don't know what's going to happen.
But
which I know
one's going to happen?
It will happen off the Canary Islands. That would be a landslide off the Canary Islands. No, the Canary Islands is out there, almost like 200 miles from the
documentary.
That's far, far away. What about the asteroid that's going to hit Earth? Is that on target?
You talking about that on target? I mean, they ain't a damn asteroid.
How the fuck do you? That's probably what you've got every base covered, but the damn asteroid.
But not
you've got every disaster, but you don't have the asteroid covering.
No, but if you look at the $10 bill shows you that it will be a tsunami that will hit the East Coast. Look at your $10 bill.
You know, you got to stop believing. You got to use discernment. That's a crock of bullshit.
No, when you fold your $10 bill the same way that they had the $20 bill, when they fold the $20 bill, it showed that the World Trade Center got hit. Now, fold your $20
you know,
bill.
I swear to God, you country boys are the most gullible fucks out there. I swear you guys are. You know.
Have you ever looked at the $20
country.
Bill?
I swear you guys would not make it in the city.
y'all think you just is what
I can imagine sending some of you country BTR boys out. Like, go ahead out in the city for a day, then you come back knocking on the door with like no clothes on, just your underwear
shit,
and your tennis shoes.
Tyrone lives 30 minutes away from me. Tyrone, I'm about to go to Tyrone's house tonight. I'm gonna knock on Tyrone's door. I'm gonna knock on his door. He's worrying about Tommy.
He'll probably,
he better worry about
he'll
me.
He'll probably shoot you.
No, he ain't going to shoot me because he ain't got no aim. He ain't got no fucking aim.
He'll probably shoot you. I'm dead man.
No damn aim.
I've been in the military. I'm sure he's got weapons. I'm sure he's on a high alert status.
Let me tell you, I would never go to the military with fucking Tyrone because I know Tyrone's a fucking bitch. Tyrone, you hear that fucking shit? You a fucking bitch. I would never
leave him alone. He's a good man.
Nah, fuck Tyrone. Tyrone's a fucking biased
ass. Will you take it up with him?
Dude,
why are you
y'all
doing this?
Listen to Tyrone all you want to, man. Listen to Tyrone and all
why
you want to.
Why are you
to.
Doing
Tyrone
this?
Pay,
I don't
Tyrone
God,
pay,
stop.
Tyrone paid $200 a fucking month. Tyrone paid $200 a month for 8 hours a show fucking 7 days a week. Who the hell does 8 hours a show 7 days a week?
This is the same way he started. You filled off everything in between. You were
I know we got a drift here, Michael. I had to just cool you down for a second here.
He was
got a
just
wonderful
acting like
drift
he was
there.
Sane. He was just showing signs of lucid sanity. He was almost interesting to talk to, and then
get
he just
on
went
track.
Left. God, that's how they do it.
God bless him. Run him for president. Running for president.
Now, those Sabret hot dogs that they sell in New York City,
mm-hmm.
They're pretty good. They're beef. And I like to get them with mustard, spicy mustard, and red onions. Those
red onions,
are good.
Sauerkraut. Oh, my God. They be killing it.
And you know what else I like that they have on those trucks, on those little things? A knish. And it's just potato, like a little... mashed potato or something, or chopped up potato with the fried coating on it. Those knishes are good, and the beef ones. But now they got all kinds of things in New York. They've got bakeries on trucks.
Yeah, they have like dumb food trucks now that come from all over the place.
Okay, now you know they got that from Los Angeles.
That's a
huge
thing
now. Yeah, I
know
they're big over there in San Francisco. And
well, not San Francisco so much. Not San Francisco so much, but Los Angeles. San Francisco, it's hard to maneuver a truck, at least in the
up and down that hill.
Man, it's, San Francisco is a weird place to drive. You could be driving along and then all of a sudden make a right turn and it's like straight down. It's a pretty weird place to drive.
Yeah.
Great place, though.
But have y'all had some bros, Jay? You had some bros pizza, man. That's a pro pizza. It's pretty good up there, man. But with them big ass
man, we got
pizza there.
You know what's another one right next to as good as that is the Nathan's. They got the Nathan's.
Nathan's
hot dogs.
Those are all the New
yeah.
Yorkers that I know. The owners, they consider that the best.
Yeah. How many slices you get with like one slice? Like you get like two slices in one?
They
or
have big
like
pizza.
That?
I can't think of the name of the place on Columbus. What's the name of the place on Columbus in the '70s, Jay? God,
well, not
Ray's. Yeah, Ray's Pizzas. That's like one of the most famous. But they're all pretty comparable.
Yeah, just give me that one that whole slice with two pieces in it.
Like, yeah, they got a big.
They got places now where you get a slice for a dollar.
That's
some
the competition.
Are garbage.
Jay, you in the Bronx, right? Jay, you in the Bronx?
Yep.
Everybody goes to Manhattan.
Jay,
right next
up
to
in
Harlem. I'll be back and forth because I got a girl out in Harlem, so I'll be staying there. And
I know about it a lot over there, Jay. My grandparents lived on 164 and Woody Crest for 50 years. I've been going over there all my life.
Jay, do you go to Yonkers sometimes, Jay? You be up in Yonkers?
I haven't been there in a while, but I went there. I've been there a couple of times.
Okay. You know how DMX and all them boys is, Jay the Kiss and all them boys. You know, Styles P and then Dan Shoot Lee.
I don't know them personally, but, I mean, I know people that know them and, you know, that's around that area. Yeah. Like, I just got friends that's from around that neighborhood, but.
Aren't you? Didn't you say you were in High Bridge? What are you like in the 170s? You said you were in High Bridge.
You know,
you're in the same area that
River.
I just mentioned.
By the Bronx River area, you know Bronx River.
Right.
When the last time you been to 41st Side? You been over there on 44th Side?
The Queens.
Yeah, 41st Side. Yeah.
Far away.
Queens Bridge. Years.
Yeah, with
that's
my
far away.
Man. Hey, but you get down with MOP, right? You know about MOP and all them. You know about MOP
now.
You know about East New York and all that shit, Brownsville and all that.
Yeah, I got friends out, you know, I mean, spread out all over the place, Brooklyn, Manhattan.
Yeah, you know how to get down into East New York and Brownsville and down. And Manhattan Heights and all that, man.
They get down there the same way they get down in East St. Louis, in Liberty City, in Miami, in Hunters Point, in San